Really excited about today's guest. We got some interesting topics that we're going to be discussing. Stick around for John Jones, Gustafson 2, as well as some NBA talks. Welcome back, everybody, to the Culture Punch podcast. I'm your host, Wall Street. I got a special announcement. We are officially live on iTunes and Google. So you can listen to us on Google Podcasts, which is through Google Music, and iTunes Connect, which is through Apple's podcast. So it's been a long time coming. We're still on SoundCloud. Now we're on those platforms. I've already put in for Spotify. I'm still waiting to get approved on Spotify. So I just really wanted to bring you that news. Really excited about it. Now, I got a special guest today, one of my best friends for a really long time. I'm really excited. We've been trying to do this for a while. He's finally back in town. Introduce yourself.
Hello, everybody. My name is Corey. I'm also welcome to be on this podcast today. It's been a long time coming, and let's get ready to talk about some
Let's go. I'm excited. Okay, so we got the Gustafson and John Jones 2 fight coming up, and this is something you and I have talked about since.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, so we were actually just talking about it, right? We were just talking about how the pressure for John Jones to really just be on his A game since being gone for so long, and you know, cameras always on him, and you know, it must be so hard for him to relax and really just kind of get a break from his training because all eyes on him, right?
Yeah. Well, it's been a 2-year layoff for him right now, and I think for any fighter in any sports, you know, boxing, even if you play football or basketball, you know, 2-year layoff is a tough layoff to come back from. And excuse me. And for John Jones to come back and to compete at the high level that he's been competing at, you know, it's going to be tough because arguably that was his toughest fight was against it.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Yeah. Now, they say Gustafson is in the best. He's a better fighter now than he is back then. Do you agree with that?
I agree
with you, too.
I don't know.
He's been caught a couple times. He's been knocked out. I think that his chin isn't there. Mm-hmm. And if he gets into that lazy kind of fighting that he did in the fourth and fifth round, John Jones is going to knock him out.
I think that he's more experienced, of course, that, but I think Gustin was a guy that was better with age. So when he was younger, you know, he was more athletic. He's an active fighter, but now, you know, being caught a couple times, being dropped, you know, losing a tough fight to Daniel Cormier, he got knocked out by Anthony Johnson, you know, coming in with John Jones. And from what I'm hearing, John Jones actually has punching power now, and he never had that before in the past. You know, he was mainly, you know, a technician, where he'll just break you down, kick, 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 jab, jab, take you down to the ground, burn you out, submission.
I always told everyone that, you know, bone hurts. You know, he was skinny, but bone hurts. You know, you get hit.
Yeah, it does.
And that's
it does.
So Gustafson, I thought for the first fight, I thought he was ready. I thought that he looked good the first 3 rounds. I went back and rewatched that fight, so it was a lot closer than I originally thought. I still thought Gustafson won the fight, but I've told you this before. Yeah. If you have to really beat the champion. You just can't win the fight.
Yeah.
And in that case, I thought he won the fight. And he probably had a, what would you say, like a 10-8 round in the last round. And that's why.
Yeah, but we all know John Jones's problems in the past. Mm-hmm. So, like, how focused was John Jones in that camp?
Right.
We honestly don't know. You know, the guy is going out every other night. It's all over the news. Everybody knows this. The cocaine problems. So we don't.
Fleeing the scene.
Even John Jones said it himself. Like, you fought me off a half a camp.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing this, partying, drinking, whatever, extra bullshit.
Right.
And
doing the most.
Doing the most. And that was his closest fight. You know what I mean? And even though I think the styles too make sense, you know, I think that's John Jones' probably tallest opponent that he fought was,
I think so,
Alexander. And I think the styles, the height, all that made sense, you know, for, you know, him not to understand that style of fighter. You know what I mean?
Right.
Coming in with good striking. He actually took Jones down, too. And that was crazy. I think that was the first time John Jones was ever taken down.
I think
down
so, too. He just he wasn't able to keep him down, obviously, because, I mean, John Jones just, he's good on the ground also. Now we know that. He was a wrestler, but he's very slithery, I guess. I don't know what I'm looking for. Like, he couldn't hold on to him.
Well, he's like Connor. They're just, like, athletic as hell.
Yeah.
And, like, Max Holloway, you've seen it. Like, when he gets taken to the ground, he's already sitting back up. They're, like, that slim fit that it's, like, they can easily bend and easily turn. You know, they can get right back up. It's, I was watching the Max fight. I'm, like, there's guys like him and Connor McGregor. You see when they get taken down, they can just come back up. Connor versus Khabib, that was a totally different story. But
well,
Connor,
Khabib,
Connor versus
bear wrestler.
Majority. Well, actually, he stopped, I think, 2 takedowns in the 4th round.
Who's that? Connor?
Connor did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He sprawled on one. Another one he got right back up, I believe. So, like, Khabib, you know, I don't want to switch fights, but the passion that Khabib had going in that fight to take down Connor was a different story. Right. But, you know, Jones is a guy that you can't keep on the ground.
Well, no, that's a good thing that you bring that up because Khabib was fighting with a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Not only did the title continuously elude him because, who was it? Was it Tony Ferguson? He was going to fight Tony. Who was it? I don't remember who he was supposed to fight.
It was Tony Ferguson twice.
He kept coming out because he was hurt or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, and then you got Connor that came in. You got they attacked his nationality. No, not so his nationality, but his religion.
Yeah.
His being a Muslim and stuff like that. And so he had that chip on his shoulder to kind of come in and prove to everyone that he is not just all hype, that he can beat someone like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought he did it with elegance. I know at the end of the day, he overreacted and did some things like that. But, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal as though they made it, right? But the reason why I think that relates to John Jones is because now John has that same chip. I haven't fought in 2 years. Everyone looks at me as I take steroids. I'm a cheater. And he's trying to prove everyone wrong. He's trying to show that, you know, even though things have come up in my past, that's not who I am. I'm a different person. I'm a better fighter. And I think he's going to prove it. Because if you look at, was it 4 years?
Yeah.
Pretty much he hasn't fought consistently.
Yeah.
Would we be calling him the GOAT if he was still undefeated within those 4 years?
If he was still undefeated?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think we would. The problem with John Jones is he's been on this comeback fight for the past like four fights.
That's true.
Because he's been in trouble for the past four fights. Each fight he comes back, then he gets in trouble again. He comes back, he gets in trouble again. In my eyes, I think John Jones is the greatest of all time because what he did to that light heavyweight division, when how stacked that division was, if he went through like Rampage, Shogun, Machida. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He went through that. I think that at that time, that division was at its peak. And he was a young guy coming up and just destroying everybody. Brandon Vera. Forgot the guy's name who he got the draw with or no contest.
Oh, it was Matt Hamill.
Hamill.
And it was because of a 12-6 elbow.
12-6 elbow.
Yeah, that's why I said undefeated because he was winning the fight.
He was winning the fight, yeah. But John is definitely... in my eyes, the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. But he's been having this comeback fight every single fight for the past four fights. So this fight, to me, is no different.
Right.
You know, I'm just hoping this guy doesn't... Nothing happens after the fight, like with...
I know. As it gets closer, though, it's kind of... those questions do loom, and I know he wants to get away mm-hmm. from that, but at the same time, if that's been your motto in the past, right, that then you're the mantra that comes with you, maybe you're going to test dirty at the end of the fight. What happens then, though? If he wins the fight and then that happens, well, I mean, what happens? Because this is, again, the indefinite suspension, right?
And it's, well, I think he gets the for sure 4 years, the 4 year suspension. I'm not sure if it'll be, he'll probably get the 4 years.
Well, they had the 4 years and then they fought it. And then they showed up that it was, what he said was something in his system was, what did he say? It was like,
it was like a salt you put into like
an Olympic
size pool. So it wasn't that much.
So,
a trace.
So, if that was arguable, right? He was out, 2 years and then now he's back, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's okay. But if it comes up again, what are you going to say?
They'll find the thing with John Jones. He's still young enough to come back. It was 4 years. 30 years old.
Yeah. He said though.
Yeah. He's young enough to come back from a 4 year, you know, suspension if it happened. But if it happens again, you know, I think mentally he's shot. You know, I think his career might take a different turn.
Right.
You know, he's still marketable. He can still be a coach. He can go into Muay Thai.
Well, he said that if the other option when fighting it, if they didn't win or it didn't look like there was any hope of them winning, he was going to talk with Dana and ask for his release from the UFC so he can fight like at ONE FC in Japan or something. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's away from the, I just don't know how, if the Nevada State Athletic Commission says you can't fight, right, and you go and fight overseas, I don't know if they put a pause, like a pause button on your suspension until you try to come back and fight here because you're fighting. They're trying to ban you from fighting, even though that's a different country. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I don't know how that works either.
I'm sure they would probably do something like that. They'd
probably put a pause on it, you know, because they're like, oh, well, you're not going to follow by our rules. You're going to go overseas. We're not going to count that towards your suspension. You know, you go over there and fight.
Which sucks, right? Because at the end of the day, he's still young. He needs to make money. Things happen, right?
Yeah.
And if compared to other sports, there's people that come up dirty all the time. Martavis Bryant just came up dirty. I think Josh Gordon. Mm-hmm. They didn't really give details, but
I don't think that was a performance enhancing that Gordon came up right. dirty.
I'm just saying, like, they come up dirty for something, yeah. whether it's drugs or whether mm-hmm. it's performance enhancing. Mm-hmm. You know, because he's come up dirty for cocaine before. That's why yeah. I bring it up. So, regardless of what it is, it happens across the board. People, mm-hmm. you know, they try to do things by the rules. I don't think John Jones takes steroids by no means, because it doesn't. I don't see it. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen him in person. I don't yeah. see it. It doesn't. Yeah. You can't tell that. So, if he was going to do that, he's not like a Vitor Belfort. Yeah. Vitor Belfort, when he's not on steroids, yeah, he's all, you know, and then when he is, he's all ripped.
Yeah, see, but the steroids that they're trying to say that John Jones was taking is performance enhancing. So, it's not something that's going to make you, you know, physically, appearance-wise, right. perception more built or ripped or more pumped up. It's supposed to just enhance your, right. you know, maybe I'm a little more, you know, active, blood flowing. Yeah. I feel fresher, I feel younger, et cetera. But whatever Vitor Belfort was on, was crazy.
You could see it. He had no titties, right? And then he takes steroids, and then he's got these pecs. The
guy looked like an 18-year-old fucking beast.
Yeah, the version of him, he was fast again. It was crazy. Yeah,
he was on a 5-fight win streak, and he almost submitted John Jones. He went up a weight class yeah. to fight John Jones on a short notice, and he had him in arm. He actually dislocated John's arm, yeah. I believe, and he almost had that win.
And he got a title shot at middleweight. He fought against Anderson. Remember Anderson? He's the one that got front kicked by Anderson.
Yeah, but that was before the TRT, I believe.
There was two times that he took it. He took it, and he was on the TRT at yeah. then. And then he was saying because he has non-existent hormone levels, so he needs to take that in order just to go. You know, and so he won. They allowed him to yeah. take it, but then they told him no, and then he fought without it, and mm-hmm. then that's when he was just terrible. And then he again presented his case, mm-hmm. and they said, okay, we're going to allow it. And then they allowed it. And I think what happened was he was winning and they're like, no, he's cheating. It took him off. He started losing. So like, oh, okay. He's not winning and we're going to let him take it. I mean, cause no one really took, he's old. A lot of people aren't really taking him serious and he's at the latter part of his career. If you really look at
yeah,
it. Right?
Yeah. You're right. He retired, right?
I don't know, man. You hopefully. Never know with Vitor. He's retired a couple times and he's come back. But on paper, I believe that he has retired. Yes.
The TRT era for the UFC. That was an interesting era. A lot of people were saying, that was like the WWE era of the UFC. Not because of trash talking, because everyone's body was fit.
Right.
Fucking see. Yeah. Chael Sonnen, everybody's fucking has a six pack.
Mark Coleman back in the day. Like they had.
Overeem.
Yeah.
Overeem's yeah. fucking ass.
Overeem never came to the UFC because he couldn't because of they started testing for steroids.
Well, he was taking, or what was he eating? He was eating horse meat over there.
Really?
He was eating fucking
horse. He's from the Netherlands.
He's fucking huge. Can you cuss on your podcast?
Yeah, yeah, okay. You can cuss. That's fine. The way it does it is I can put explicit okay. to let them know, to let okay. the viewers know. So that's okay. It doesn't. I have no sponsors or nothing like that. So it's not like I'm
well, not
I'm
yet. Look, not, no, yet. Not yet. You don't want them to look back into your catalog and hear some people cussing.
Well, you know what's funny? This is what I told Alyssa because she was like, we were going through, because I bought out the domain for the mm-hmm. website. I own the name yeah. Culture Punch Podcast. Yeah. I decided to put it out as the Culture Punch Podcast. Mm-hmm. And then I saw that someone back in 2014 used the same name. So I own it now. They made one show. They haven't done it since.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because the logo that I wanted to do was a fist coming out of some kind of wall. And that's originally what I wanted to do for my logo, mm-hmm. except coming off of my mouth, like my face, right? Like screaming. Nice. And it's crazy because I've never seen their logo and I thought the same thing that they did. And, you know, obviously I think the name's a great name, but, yeah, when we were talking about it, I told her, I said, look, cause I started going through it after that and I was like, man, people give up on podcasts and yeah. cause you can see when they start and then when it just falls off. And I'm like, if you go into it with the intention of just having fun as a hobby, getting together with some buddies and then just talking, you'll be all right. The yeah. minute that you start saying, oh, I'm not making money, I don't have the views, all this other stuff, is when you start to fail. For me, mm-hmm. I could care less, right? I don't need any extra money. Yeah. I'm happy. Yeah. I just enjoy sitting down, getting together, doing this, you know?
Yeah, and just talking.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've done this for years. Yeah. We've always said we just need to put microphones in front of us.
Exactly.
Because some of our conversations are very interesting. I got to get Ray in here whenever he stops working 14 jobs.
Yeah, you do.
Ray is really funny. But yeah, so... you can cuss. More of the story, sorry, you can cuss. I kind of
so,
went on a rant
for so, let's kind of change the subject a little bit. What episode are you on for your podcast?
I am on episode 14. I believe this is 14.
14.
I released 13. Yeah, this is 14. So on iTunes right now, there's episode 12. And that's only because I was having an issue with this desktop. Mm-hmm. So I recorded the other one with on my laptop. And so when I was uploading, I didn't have my laptop, and or vice versa. I didn't have the desktop, I had the laptop. And so I had to upload something in order to get approved right then. So I was like, okay, I'll just do the last one that I have, which is 12. But yeah, we have 13. I'm going to upload as much as I can. I just have like 6 hour allowance that I can upload a month.
Okay. Okay.
So what, you know, I'll start doing that. But yeah, this one's officially 14. We've talked about my first solo episode. So this is something interesting. Okay. So check this out. I've read everywhere that people want to grow with you. Your audience wants to grow with you. So the first one, I'm very monotone. I talk like this. And I'm talking about a very serious subject too. I'm talking about the Nike and the Colin Kaepernick ad. Mm. And like I try to be like biased and not give my opinions, but I felt like it kept coming out. And then you can see the changes, like part two, three and stuff. Like I was like, And then I started like, I got to not do that kind of stuff, right? But we've talked about Colin Kaepernick, a lot of NFL, a little bit about college basketball and college football or college sports in general. I had Shay on here. We talked about if athletes should get paid. We didn't really dive too much into that. Now I think about it, like,
So what do you think on that?
Well, my take is this, and this is what I told him, because he was saying like, well, if you pay the football program, which for most university brings in all the money, if you're paying them, you know, let's say they're getting $10,000 or whatever each player a month, I don't know, or for the year signing bonus, you have to pay every athlete in every sport that. And I said, no, that's why what you do is you put guidelines. You put like the athletes will make like a 2% off of all the revenue. And if they don't bring in the fans, then that 2% is lower than everybody else's, because obviously football brings in people, basketball brings in people. And that's kind of my take. And the reason why I think you should at least put something in, even if it's not a lot, is you want to give incentives for players to go to school and not just jump ship to the NFL or the G League, because now you can go straight out of high school to the G League.
Yeah, someone had said something interesting about that. He was pretty much saying, if we want to pay the players, pay them,
right,
but let's make them pay for school.
Right.
So it costs you, what, $25,000, $30,000 to go to public university a year? And we'll pay the guy $35,000.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's now you got to manage your money in order to pay for school.
Right.
And does that include, you know, your room and board? Or, you know what I mean? Now you have to manage your money.
Yeah.
So if it costs $30,000 to go to school, and we'll pay you $30,000 a year,
right,
to play for us, you have a full ride scholarship. Majority of them have it. Meal plan, room and board, FAFSA takes care of a little bit more. Am I saying that the players shouldn't get paid? No. You know, that's a really touchy subject for me, because I played, you know, small college basketball and, the track as well. You know, I never played on the big Division I level of things, and I didn't have a full ride, so I was used to paying and kind of hustling, you know, to get everything done. But it's an interesting subject. You know, it's good to see your you know, point of view on that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. That's actually really good, because I never even thought about like that point. But if you're going to go that route, I say, I mean, if they do that, I think what the majority of students would do, and I think this would probably be like 90% of athletes, is they would pocket that $30,000 and go out for a student loan on their own, right? And I'm talking about, I guess I shouldn't say 90,000, let's say, or 90%, let's say 60%, because we know there's some athletes out there that struggle with their education, so they don't have like the GPA qualifying within their state to get that. For us, it's the Roadrunner or whatever it's called, the lottery.
The lottery, right?
And, yeah. I think that's what they do. They rack up, because the point of paying athletes is because there's an argument out there that said, well, you're giving them a full ride. You're paying for their travel to go to stadium, their hotels, all that stuff. And that's all fine and dandy, right? But at the end of the day, in their eyes, in the athletes' eyes, they don't see that. They're still kids, right? So they don't see that. It's kind of like a parent that takes care of you. They need money to buy their mom a home, or they need money to buy food and, you know, things like that.
Well, they get like so a college like Ohio State who brings in tens to hundreds of millions of dollars a year from their football program, they can have extra incentives, I think. You know, of course, you know, the meal plan, make sure that's always paid for, the dorms, maybe little extra things. You know, I don't know what else that they can have, like some type of, I don't think necessarily you have to give them a paycheck every month, but they can add extra things. I don't know if there's like another scholarship they can open up, maybe a fund that they can take money out of.
Or here's an idea. This is what I told Shay. I said, what about just allowing, and this is a problem that the NCAA won't do this because they want some money, mm-hmm. right? If they're going to allow this, but why not allow the athletes to get sponsors? Like you do it like a fighter does, right? Like if like, let's say Zion, right? You don't think Adidas, Nike, all these guys would have been all over Zion. Let him handle his own business, allow him to be able to sign some kind of deal with a sponsor, and then he's making his own money. Now it has nothing to do with college sports because there's a coach isn't paying someone more money to come to his school kind of thing, you know? It's him, his talents carried him to where Adidas wants to sign him, but put a cap on it. Like, obviously no $120 million deals like Kobe and those guys, mm-hmm. right? But like maybe like a 50 or I'm sorry, like a $2 million deal or something. Mm-hmm. And someone will be happy with that.
Yeah, it's just weird to bring money into like amateur sports like that.
Right.
You know, we've seen it happen with like San Diego State, you know, when you have boosters or whatnot bringing money into the game, paying these guys, they start shaving off points. When you bring money into that situation that's so green and everybody's so green at that, I think it changes everything up. You know, I was watching a documentary about a coach, AAU coach. He's a coach of a team called DC Assault, one of the top AAU programs in the country. They had Kevin Durant come out of there, Michael Beasley, etc., maybe multiple NBA players. You know, craziest documentary. Money was involved. Actually, drug money was involved. The head of the program was like a drug kingpin, but it was interesting to see both sides of the story because they're saying, oh yeah, he might have been a drug kingpin, but what he did for my life changed fucking life.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can influence kids to certain colleges now. When you put money, that's what the problem with the AAU, they call it the billion-dollar industry right now, amateur sports. You know, you saw what happened with Louisville. Supposedly a player got paid. Arizona had a little twist up with DeAndre Ayton, right?
Yeah, and then they had their stuff too with, they've had it with the full basketball
with the program. Basketball program. So when you bring money into those situations that are so green, it just... You know, it's not, I wouldn't say if it's the right place or the right time, but it's just always problems.
Right.
And there's no way you can really sanction it or regulate it that you can filter money in, you know, legally.
Right.
You know, and it is messed up that these programs are banking billions of dollars a year. You know what I mean? Off of this one college athlete, you know, or this person, the face of the program.
What's like modern day slavery? If you think at it, I mean, they're getting all this money for. I know that you're paying, but it's.
But if you
compare to that, because you're paying for them to sleep somewhere, you're paying for them to eat somewhere.
You know but if you think about it, the guy that's really bringing them the money, it's normally the guy that's going to get drafted to the NBA. There's not a face of your program that's bringing in X amount of money. Johnny Manziel, what he did for Texas A&M, ton of money, sold out stadiums every year, jersey sales, etc. He's the one making millions of dollars. Normally, the face of your program, Zion Williams, what he's doing for Duke and college basketball right now, the ratings, he's going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
I know it's a team sport and whatnot, but I just think when you bring in money to something that green and that new, I think it brings in more money, more problem bullshit. You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
So I'm just not sure if paying the players is the right thing.
Would you agree with this then? Would you agree that maybe... Now would be the time to maybe start talking about it and figuring out if that's something they should, like a serious conversation though, to say that's the time that we're in and how athletes are going this and that and in direction. Let's see if we can encompass some kind of plan for us to put some kind of incentive program in place. Would that be fair?
Oh yeah, I think that'd be fair.
At least to take it serious. Cause if athletes are seeing that step, I think that changes the game. Cause people nowadays, there's so much poverty out there that people aren't trying to get an education. They want to make money now. Mm-hmm. So the NBA, or I'm sorry, college, 1 year and then you're gone. Football, 2 years and then you're gone. And then now you had it with Preston. He was a Kansas dude. He went overseas and then he came back to the draft. Like, he's just an example of one of those guys that wants to make money. He needs to make money.
Well, that's his career, is basketball.
Right.
You know, he wasn't planning on being a college student or going to school to be a lawyer.
Exactly.
Going to school, be a psychologist, a doctor, engineer. His plan is to play in the NBA. Mm. So the fastest route that he can take and get there, he's going to do it. But he's not going to say, I'm going to go to school for 4 years get my degree, then go to the MBA, which would be, I think back in the 90s, a smart thing to do. Because right. you said, okay, the average MBA guy back in the 90s, six
didn't
years.
Make much, yeah.
Six didn't make that much anyway.
20 million maybe.
We'll play an average of 6 years, six seasons, then they'll be out. They'll coach a college, high school, et cetera, or teach. But nowadays, you know, you can make so much money. You don't really need your bachelor's degree. You don't, it's not marketable for a guy to come out as a senior than a guy to come out as a freshman.
Right.
Because a freshman, he actually has room to learn. You know, 18, 19 year old guy has a higher ceiling than the guy that's 22. We saw that with Dwight Howard versus Okafor. Okafor mm-hmm. just won a national championship, college player of the year.
I think he came out as a junior, right?
So he came out as a junior. He was 21 or 22 or something. Yeah, I think 21. He was a redshirt junior, yeah, actually. Yeah. And Dwight Howard was a high school center. He had two guys that played the same position. One guy just won a national championship in college. Other guy just won a state championship. Other guy just was player of the year in college. Other guy is Gatorade or McDonald's All-American player of the year, et cetera. And they pick the younger guy just based off potential. We see it all the time. They draft guys that average 5 points a game and 5 rebounds in a top 10. It's like, why are you drafting this guy?
Yeah.
Oh,
everyone's for a ceiling.
Everyone. Yeah. Potential.
Yeah.
That's what they draft.
That's hard though, man. Would you look at that?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. But it shows that guys don't want to finish college.
Right.
If I'm a McDonald's All-American, you know, majority of those guys are not looking to finish college. You have a guy that, you know, went to Kentucky, you know, played two seasons at Kentucky, and now he's transferring out. He needs playing time.
Right.
Did he go to that school for academics? Or, no.
Yeah.
No, he didn't go for to finish college there. He's going to make the NBA. So the fastest route to go to the NBA, that's their main, you know, objective.
But that's, see, for me, that's basketball is one of those exception sports because there's not a lot of injury. Now, you go over to football, at any given moment, at any play, you can end your career. Mm-hmm. That's why I feel like I like that football is at least a minimum 2 years, right? But that's why I push for the athletes to get an education, because if you're playing football, let's take Jake Locker, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't really do much in the NFL, and then he retired at like 25 years old. I don't know what he's doing now, but
I think he graduated because he left as a senior at Washington.
He did, yeah. Yeah. But I'm saying, like, imagine him, he not getting a degree in anything, mm-hmm. going to the NFL, doesn't really like it, and then retires. What does he have to fall back on? He can go back to school, sure, right? But you had a full ride at one point. Why, you know, you didn't take advantage of that. Now you're out, you're going back. Now you're paying for it on your own. Again, mm-hmm. as a college student, look at Willis McGahee. Mm-hmm. Willis McGahee was one of the best college players at that time. He gets hit, his knee's done. He falls in the draft, I think to like the late second or early third round because of his knee. He had a good career overall, but I'm saying, like, imagine that knee injury at that championship bowl game would have been it for him.
But the interesting thing about that, and smart thing actually, he took out an insurance policy in his legs.
That's what you, yeah, I remember you mentioning that to me. Yeah,
so he, I think he got some money from that.
But how many kids do that?
Well, you know, when you're at that level, and that's your last game in college football, you know, of course, you know, I don't know how it works, but of course, you know, you can probably take out an insurance policy for a couple million dollars. They're not going to let the third string running back do that.
Right.
But I wanted to talk about John Calipari. So what he does, if someone signs their letter of intent to University of Kentucky, you have a lifetime scholarship. John Wall and DeMarcus, they can come back whenever they want and still have a full ride scholarship to graduate.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How many universities do that? Do you know?
I don't. I just know John Calipari does that because he pushes his kids to come back and graduate.
Is it the university or is it his plan to do that? Like, if you were to leave, will you think Kentucky would still honor that and do that with future athletes, or do you think that's just a John kind of move?
I think it might be a Kentucky thing.
That's good.
I think it might be a Kentucky thing because, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a Kentucky thing.
That's good.
But I'm trying to think who came back and graduated. It was either DeMarcus Cousins or John Wall. One of those two, they're going back and they just graduated from there. So, like, that's a good policy to have in. Or, like, instead of if you can't pay the players, pay for the graduate school.
Yeah.
Or have that lifetime scholarship.
Yeah.
You know, where they and can come back be, and
that
finish
would be,
school.
I think that's good. I would agree with that. If you can't pay the players, if they had something like that, I think that's good. Again, you're incentivizing something. Hey, look, you come here. We can't pay you, right? But at least, even if you stay 1 year, mm-hmm. you will have at least a bachelor's degree time waiting for you for you to come back. So you can choose anything, come back at any given time. We'll give you 4 years of education on us, right? I think that's
because even paying players is so interesting that, you know, they're going to find loopholes like, okay, I'm making $40,000 a year playing for the University of Kentucky.
Yeah.
And I don't want to graduate yet. I don't know if I want to play this season. I'll take a year off.
Right.
Red shirt, get an extra $45,000. What is that really prepping the kids for? Because when they get out of college, are they going to be making that money they're getting paid to play in college?
That's why when you had mentioned earlier, like a program like Ohio State, they bring in so much money. Mm-hmm. If you start looking at it in that sense, then all the other little schools like UNM, they're going to have no chance, right? If you have a program that makes so much money that you can offer more people more money to go there, then it's going to just become a bidding war. So I agree. There's a lot of little things that you have to avoid.
You can't really yeah. regulate the thing, or, you know, it's hard to evaluate. It sounds good. And you hear the horror stories of college athletes and what they go through. And I just don't see how you can do it. I don't see how you can do it. Because who was it? The guy from Connecticut, Andre Drummond, right? He was talking that, I guess they didn't have a meal plan or something like that, where he was going to bed hungry.
Really?
Or maybe, I don't know how their meal plan worked. I'm pretty sure it's Andre Drummond. He was saying, he plays in the NBA now for the Pistons. And he was saying that he was going to bed hungry. You know, or maybe it was Kimba Walker, someone from Connecticut, UConn, and they're going to bed hungry.
And UConn used to get some prolific players.
Yeah.
When they had, who was that coach's name?
Calhoun.
Calhoun, yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorite college basketball coaches.
He was really good. Like I was, I don't know who I was talking about. I think I was talking to a buddy of mine from Homeco. I was telling him that I hate Syracuse, but the 2-3 defense that Coach Boeheim enforces mm-hmm. is legendary. You know, like they're known. Anyone that comes in, he can get new kids every year, and they're going to run his 2-3 defense. They sleep 2-3 defense, right?
Yeah.
They're known for that. He's one of those coaches that just, and I like that because defense is one of those things that gets lost.
Yeah, but it's interesting that he's so loyal to that system.
Yeah.
It's not really a proven winning system. He won one national title, I believe.
Right.
It's not that proven to win in that system, but he's so loyal to it.
He causes problems for the other thing. The problem on his end is on the offensive side. That's always been his thing. Like when mm-hmm. he had Carmelo, I mean, they won, right? Because mm-hmm. they finally had an offensive weapon. The defense to me, because they hold teams to low points. It's, they just can't score.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they had, was it Johnny Flynn? Was that his name? The point guard?
Johnny Flynn was a really good player. Yeah.
But he, if I remember, that's all they really had was him at that time, right?
Think it, Eric Diebendorf might've been there too as well.
Diebendorf. I don't remember that. To me, the defense is the problem. I don't know. Yeah, you could be loyal to something, but it's...
But think about, like, that's one of those college basketball systems that it's like a system. Because it's like, trying to compare it to a college football team. They're good, but they're not really prepping people for pro.
College football team?
Well, like, it's...
Oh, South Dakota State. Yeah, where Carson Wentz came from.
Yeah, but like, Syracuse, like, other than Anthony... I don't think they had any other good pro players. Yeah, I know Wark made it a couple of years there. Johnny Flynn was bust in the pros. You know, they used to call him the baby LeBron because no one would stop that guy. Yeah.
Well, they drafted, that was a Minnesota draft, like three guards.
Three-point guards.
That was weird. Well,
they just wanted to be the Lord of the Rings and have all the chips in their hands. Say, hey, you need a point guard? Come trade me.
Yeah.
You need a point guard? Come trade me. And no one bid on that.
Yeah.
They want to showcase their point guards. And plus, Ricky Rubio wasn't going to be able to play in the NBA for another like year or two because he didn't had his contract. To
come. Remember, not just the contract, but he didn't like that he was drafted by Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he
wasn't going to play.
He was young, you know. He was young, and that's interesting to say because him and Luka, they came from the same league, I believe. Because Rubio played for he played for Barcelona.
Yeah, and then
Barcelona.
Luka Doncic played for Real.
Real Madrid. Yeah, that's my like one of my favorite new players.
He has been preaching about him since, I don't know, last year, but even before, like I hadn't even heard of him even before they started showing his highlights. I was looking at that kid from Georgetown now, the little white kid that can dunk all crazy.
Oh yeah,
that's the kid I was looking at. I was looking at Zion, obviously. not in what was the other big recruit? Not Reddish or those guys. There was another recruit.
RJ Barrett.
There you go, RJ Barrett. So I was looking at those guys. I didn't even, I mean, you know,
it's the power of YouTube. Yeah. Someone showed me a video of Luka, and just from the eye test, you know, I'm like, this guy is going to be, and I remember telling Alex and a lot of my friends, this guy is going to be good. You know, he had good footwork, good court vision. His IQ for his age, I think he's 19 right now, is outstanding. And he doesn't have to be athletic to score the ball.
Now, what does that say about the college level? Because a lot of athletes, I mean, he's a rarity, obviously, but a lot of college athletes don't come out game ready for the NBA, right? That's a little faster, all this stuff. He literally hit the ground running. He plays like an NBA player. He obviously played with pros out there, right? Bigger guys, stronger guys, older guys, more mature, things like that, that are smarter in the game. But what does that say for a college level argument to going overseas? Because Luka Doncic, there's not a lot of people that come out like
that. Yeah, you know what? Kobe Bryant had said years ago that Europe preps their players, really teaches them the game right compared to what we teach in America. And you've seen it even with the, not Europe, but Canada. I think a lot of their players are a little bit more advanced than
especially
our players.
Especially recently. They've recently, had a couple guys come out of
Jamal
Canada.
Murray, you know, these guys, their game IQ, and you see it with Ben Simmons. You know, they're pass first guys, they're team player guys. I'm not saying all our American players will like score first Steph Curry, but
everyone,
you know,
wants the rock though.
Everybody wants the rock. But Kobe Bryant had mentioned that outside the US they prep their players a little bit better, and that you would kind of see like a European wave of basketball players. And is Luka Doncic and, you know, Kristaps Porzingis, or these guys are the first wave. They have another guy that's I think coming in the 2019 draft from France, that's supposed to be like a number, you know, top five pick. And it's like, is this going to be the wave of that European player that's going to, you know, come into the NBA? You know, of course, you know, I believe, you know, us Americans, I think we have the best basketball players. Right. You know, we grew up playing basketball here. But, you know, I, from Kobe Bryant's words, he says that Europe and elsewhere, they prep the players a little bit better, a little bit differently. They teach them the right game, a pass first, you know, just the basics.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it comes to, you know, American players, we're like that American, like, muscle. You know what I mean? We're like, we're the fastest. Mm-hmm.
We're the strongest.
We can jump the highest. Smartest, we have the best shot. So we can kind of, like, break those barriers. You know what I mean? Because imagine if Luka Doncic was just relying on his pure athleticism. And he didn't focus on the passing, the shooting, the court vision, the step back. His techniques. You know what I mean? Like, if he didn't focus on the technical things and get his strengths so good at that, and he just like, okay, I need to be athletic. I need to be doing windmills and shit to make it in the NBA. He probably wouldn't make it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So he has the perfect, he focuses on his, you know, he made athleticism. He doesn't really need that in his game, even though he can, if he got a full court of steam, he can probably get a good dunk in, but he's not the fastest guy on the court.
Well, who was that player that was on LeBron's team when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers the first time when they made a championship run? He came from the Globetrotters. His name was something Moon. Do you remember him?
Jamario Moon.
Okay. So he was just athletic. That's all he was. Like you said, can jump out of the building, can dunk, can do this. Never really translated good as an NBA player because all he relied on was athleticism. Couldn't really shoot the ball. He couldn't really dribble too much. Everything was like a rebound dunk on you. And, but if you find your niche, you can find a place in the NBA. Look at Birdman.
Yeah. Well, cause every team needs a different aspect of the game. You need shooters, you guys that can dribble, guys that can pass, guys that can jump.
I think that's why Golden State struggle sometimes. They have too many of the same kind of
same
personalities.
Type of players. Mm-hmm. I mean, they should have lost against Houston last year in a playoff.
Oh,
I
man.
Thought.
They were down 3-1,
and then,
right?
And then this year, their problems that are stemming this year, Draymond Green is having like the worst year of his career.
Right.
He's averaging, I think, 6 points a game, or maybe 5 points a game, actually. Yeah. 3 rebounds, shooting 21% from the three-point line, and I think 40% from the field. That's terrible.
Yep.
For an ex All-Star player, that is terrible. You're pretty much playing 4-on-5 when you have a starter that was playing like that and shooting like that.
Yeah.
He's not shooting good free throws. His defense, it is what it is, but in the NBA, who has good defense? You still, right. oh, this guy locked down this guy, but he still scored 22. Right. You know what I mean?
That's a lockdown, yeah.
But his defense is still his defense, but on offense, you're playing 4-on-5. A guy can't score the ball. He's shooting, they leave him wide open for three-pointers. He's shooting 21% from the three-point line. I remember when they played in the finals.
A couple years back.
When LeBron got back and beat them, he would have been the finals MVP. He had a couple 30-point games in that series.
Yeah.
And I see Draymond now, his offensive game just has not developed. Even though that team is an interesting team because they don't need it. They have three guys that can go off at 30 whenever they want. But with Draymond, they're playing 4-on-5 on offense because he cannot score. He's shooting 21% from the three-point line. Do you notice if anyone throws a ball up from three-point line, you have a 50% chance to make it? The ball is either going in or going out.
Right.
You know, I can fucking just throw the ball not even looking. It's like, oh, it starts with a 50% chance to make. This guy's shooting 21% from the line, which is crazy. And this is an NBA All-Star last year, three-time All-Star player. I know his All-Star stems from his defense, but what's happening on offense this year, it's not working out for the team.
I read an article that said that he's sacrificing millions and millions of dollars with what he's doing. And you kind of start to see the frustration setting in because he's getting an argument with his teammates, right? And for him, it's big. He's getting mad at Kevin Durant because he really believes Kevin Durant's going to lead the team, right? For him, it's like, look what I've sacrificed. I'm sacrificing millions of dollars where I can have all these offers on the table to be a team player so we can win. That's the whole point. You say you want to win, you're going to turn your back on the team at the end of the day. Again, I see where Draymond's coming from, but at the same time, like you kind of almost should have expected this. He got a couple championships. He's going to leave. He's not loyal to that team. He wasn't drafted by the team like Draymond. What, yeah. You see what I'm saying? And his frustration stems from his bad play. Yes. Mm-hmm. His attack on KD stems from him looking and saying, I'm sacrificing my money for this team. What have you done for this team? And is that even justifiable? Well, can you do that?
It's kind of like that same like story of like, hey, I met this new girl. She's dating a guy.
Right.
But she's sleeping with me. She's cheating on this guy with me.
Yeah.
Leaves a guy for me. And then same shit happens to you. She finds another guy, moves on. You know, how loyal is fucking Durant going? Does he have to be loyal to the Warriors? He left his team that drafted him,
right,
that had them down 3-1. Go join them because these guys was crying in the parking lot and recruiting him the whole season.
Right.
So if he leaves your team for someone else, is it your choice to be mad at him? It's like I can see it disappointing, but you guys got rewarded when he got there.
Yeah, and no one looks at it like that. No one looks at it like, okay, he brought us two championships. So, and it's not him necessarily because they were already winning championships, but he was a part of that.
It was him. You know, in my belief, it was them because The first time they beat Cleveland, it was LeBron. The second top scorer was Dellavedova.
Yeah,
you know
he's having a good series though.
Yeah, but his second best player, Kyrie, was injured, and so was and the Cleveland had him up 2-1 at one point. People forgot about that. Yeah. They had him up 2-1.
Well, Steph Curry played terrible. I think the first three games. Remember, he couldn't shoot.
Yeah, well, because Delly was D'ing him up.
Yeah,
you know they had him up 2-1. And they eventually, I think they won three games in a row or whatever, ended up winning the series in six. But with LeBron and Delly taking your team to six, and then the best team ever the next year, right? They win 74 games, whatever, make it to the finals, up 3-1. And LeBron comes back and beats them.
Yeah.
They needed KD more than they thought.
And that's a perfect example. Like you said, they had a suspension on Draymond, and that affected the play. Yeah, Cleveland came to play, and they showed up, but things may have been different if Draymond would have been there. Does he have that same effect on his team now? No.
Yeah, things might have been different when Kyrie and Love would have been there in the first series.
Right.
So, like, it's playing that Monday morning quarterback, if, coulda, shoulda, woulda. Yeah. But the thing is, you know, they lost that series. And I don't care if they beat LeBron three times. The way they beat that team was like the freaking president. Every time I looked, the team was on news, just newspapers and stuff.
Right.
You know, like, oh, best team ever, better than, comparing them to the Bulls all year. Yeah. I think that was the same year Steph Curry won, like, he's like unanimous MVP, the first time it was ever done.
Yeah.
You know, like crazy stuff like that. And then you go out to lose to LeBron in that fashion. You know, you're up 3-1 and you're guaranteed the win. You know, Draymond's planning this. They have club appearances after this game and all that crap. And LeBron James is. I remember watching that game by myself, Game 7, and watching LeBron win and his emotions. I was like, wow. There's two times I said this ever, and I don't think I ever said it again, but when LeBron beat the Pistons in 07 to make it to the championship against the Spurs, I think there's one game he went 8 for 8, his last like 8 shots. This guy's the best player I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. I remember saying that about LeBron back in 07. I'm a huge Kobe Bryant fan. You know, 2016. That game 7, when I was watching him play, he chased the guy down and blocked him from behind, got the ball. You know, even though Kyrie hit the shot that kind of nailed
it. Kyrie had like 42 that game,
42 too. That game. I was like, LeBron is, you know, probably one of the best players I've ever seen play. And what LeBron can do, well, you see what he's doing with the Lakers this year. You know, he has young talent around him, but nothing. No stars.
Him and Ball. He's the only
player I've ever seen in my life that can take a team without anyone else and bring them to the good. You know, bring them to give them an opportunity to win or even make a championship. I don't think Kobe Bryant in the East can take that team LeBron took in 07 to the championship game. You just get too frustrated with them.
I mean, I'll definitely agree with the 07
Jordan.
Team.
Yeah. Jordan, no, he wouldn't. He'd get frustrated with these guys. Yeah, I'm thinking in my head, like, if there's anyone else that can do that or has done that. You know, Carmelo had a decent run with the Nuggets, yeah. But he had Chauncey, I believe, and he had, what's the guy's name? Play for the Lakers. With Kobe Bryant. Crazy dude. Do you play for the Pacers?
Oh, Meta World Peace?
Yeah.
He was there?
He was there that year.
I know Kobe. I know they had Nene.
He was Dean up Kobe. Yes, they had. Yeah, so I can't even think of anyone else that kind of brought that team that wasn't there, not a second, you know, lead average player to, you know, the good.
Right.
I think he's the only player that's ever done that. And he has to be in a discussion of best player of all time.
I agree. I definitely agree that he did it in 07. In 2016 or whatever, I felt like he had Kyrie. Did he carry most of the team? Of course, right? But he finally had someone else. And I think that showed the second time they played the Golden State Warriors, they won the series. He had some help. They won the series. You know, like you said, you could play money quarterback and go back and forth and say, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda. But the emotion he showed to bring that championship to Cleveland, mm-hmm. he did what he set out to do. I know they've been swept since and a couple, you know, lost and stuff. But he did what he set out to do. He wanted to go out and he wanted to bring a championship to Cleveland, and he did what he did. I know they still burned the jerseys, but didn't it seem like this time that he left was a little different than the last time when he went to Miami?
Well,
right?
It's like a fire that keeps on coming back. He gave it everything he got.
He did.
I mean, he was burnt out. He couldn't do anything more. You know what I mean? It was the end of the chapter. You know, and my point, even watching him lose to Golden State last year, I'm like, I can't see LeBron in a Cavaliers jersey anymore. It's kind of the end of this chapter. You know, the love story, you know, started when he came back and then they got married when they won the championship and they had kids and then it's happily ever after. But he's still continuing going. It's like, oh, this movie's kind of already over. And it was good to see him leave. I thought his time with Cleveland was over and he accomplished what he set out to do. To win a championship.
Exactly.
And he, on top of that, you know, not even just talking about the revenue stuff, but he brought Cleveland to four straight finals? Yeah, 4 straight finals.
He's been a part of a lot of finals in a row now.
Yeah, so he went to Cleveland because he played Golden State 4 times.
Yeah.
So he had 4 straight finals and a total of 5. And by him leaving, Cleveland got a blessing with Kyrie, even though they traded him away, messed up that pick. You know,
that's what's, and that's they're going to have for Cleveland.
Another first round or maybe number one overall pick this season.
Yeah.
So in like a matter of 20 years, you might have 5 first number one overall picks in one franchise.
Well, let's see what they do with it because it's very easy to not choose the right ones. People forget that before LeBron went back to Cleveland, Kyrie was doing his thing. They were only an 8th seed, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's no LeBron James, but he was also young. And the biggest thing from that is not that LeBron left because he was always going to leave, and we knew that. Mm-hmm. It was that they lost Kyrie in the process because at least LeBron leaving, having Kyrie, I think, would have kind of absorb some of those blows.
Well, that's
right now. Who do they have?
That's
they got Dellavedova back, and they're all excited about him. And he's not that same player that he was when he was there. You know, and he was never really good.
That was bad management. You've seen teams like San Antonio, how they managed the Kawhi situation.
Yeah.
Got another star back.
Yeah.
You know, and Kawhi was only gone. Kawhi has 1 year left on his contract, and they got a guy that's
just signed.
Not evenly matched to Kawhi, but he can score about the same amount of points, and he's an all-star. Of course, he's not a two-way player like Kawhi, but you got a guy that just signed a couple-year contract and that can put up 20 points a game. I think they just mismanaged that. They hopped in it too fast. You know what I mean? Of course, you got a first-round pick, and then you got Isaiah Thomas, but you only get him for one season.
And he would have stayed if but LeBron never liked him as a player.
The Styles.
Styles. They both demand the ball. And it worked in Boston because there was always someone hurt on that team. Mm-hmm. So they always needed someone to step up. Hartford knew his job now. His job was to be inside and be there when they needed him. He came up with a couple of big shots, but it was Isaiah's team, essentially. Yeah, they had Crowder, all those. But they all played better because Isaiah made them better. He went to Cleveland. It wasn't the same thing because that was LeBron's team, and Isaiah didn't know how to take a back seat in terms of the offense. Plus, he struggled.
He was dragging his leg. He was coming back off injury.
Yeah.
You know, he's not. That's the reason why he's not playing now.
Yeah.
Still not 100%. So
yeah, he's with Denver
if
now,
right? Isaiah was 100%, I think it might have worked out a little bit better because Isaiah can score the basketball. He can shoot threes. But by him being injured, he couldn't hit open shots. Huge defense liability.
Right.
And him and LeBron just didn't click.
Yeah.
You know, like in my eyes, my opinion, like LeBron and Kyrie played good together, but it wasn't like LeBron and Dwayne Wade. You know, they didn't have that connection.
Well, that's why I mentioned Lonzo, because I feel like he's kind of starting to build that connection with Lonzo like he had with Dwayne.
Because it's LeBron loves guys that can pass the ball. He loves pass first guys. And that's why LeBron and Lonzo are going to continue on and playing well together, is because they can pass the ball. You know, that's what Dwayne Wade was. You see Dwayne Wade and LeBron on the break, you know an alley-oop's going to come, or you know a good pass is going to come, or LeBron gives it to Wade, he's going to get passed back, and he's going to finish with a dunk. And that's the same thing he gets with Lonzo Ball. You know, Lonzo does the same exact thing, that he can give the ball up, and he knows it's coming back to him. And so that's one of the main reasons why I think this Laker team is, you know, right now we're in a 4 seed. You know, we might be able to do something in the playoffs, but I'm saying is don't trade Lonzo. I think Lonzo Ball has a huge upside, and though he's definitely one of my favorite players on the team. Of course, Kuzma, Ingram, you know, those guys are doing their thing, but Lonzo Ball, I think he has the most upside on the Lakers right now. So should we talk about some football? I kind of want to get into the Cowboys. You know, talk about a up and down season. You know, a season that looked like it was going the wrong direction, flipped it back around, start going a good direction, 5-game winning streak. And then, you know, what happened with the Colts? You know, we go to the Colts. We had a lot of hype going into that game, a game that was definitely winnable and a much needed win for us, and, you know, lose 24-0.
We have no room to talk because we did the same thing. We played you guys well. We beat you guys. And then we go on. We beat the Patriots. And then we go on and get smashed by the Colts. What made me mad about that whole thing is that I was looking at the schedule. And obviously the Colts need to lose at least one game. When I saw the schedule and I saw you guys, I said, okay, the way the Cowboys are playing, there's that loss they need. And then you guys let me down. I was telling Alyssa's dad, I was like, man, I can't count on them for nothing. My thing, and it was based off of fear. We play in the last game of the season. Anytime we've played the Colts the last game of the season with playoff implications, they've always, always, always beaten us. And so it was one of those things that when I looked at it and I saw what needed to happen for us to make the playoffs, I was just praying that they would lose. And so far, it looks like I think the rest of the schedule is pretty easy. They play, I think they play the Giants, and then they got us. So it's not, yeah.
The Titans, that's a interesting franchise, man. Really interesting. You know, I was actually watching highlights the other night about CJ
2K.
2K. Yeah. There you go, man.
Johnson.
Well, what a beast. What a beast. You know,
I miss watching those kind of runs because I forgot how entertaining they were when he was there.
Yeah. So do you think the directions of your franchise, you think it's going in the right direction, you know, to build a, it's even hard to say to build a Super Bowl team because you don't see any new teams win the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, of course, maybe this year.
The Rams came out of nowhere a couple years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Eagles, I wasn't expecting them to have that good of a year they did when they won the Super Bowl. Now they're making that comeback again, but the Chiefs, I mean, with...
But like the Eagles...
We'll see.
But...
Let's just say the Eagles, because the Eagles are the only team that actually won the Super Bowl. The Atlanta Falcons, they had a good year, they lost, and then they sucked after that.
Can you count down the last 10 Super Bowl winners?
Can I? Yeah, the Patriots, in order?
Oh...
Because I can tell, right, so the Broncos have won, the Seahawks have won, the Saints have won, the who else? The Colts have won,
the Giants too,
the Giants obviously, the Patriots, and the Eagles. I believe those are the last 10. Because you have the Broncos won, then they lost to the Seahawks, right?
Yeah, so Seahawks. Other than the Eagles, I believe a lot of those teams that wasn't their first time winning a Super Bowl. Maybe the Saints.
You're right. Yeah. Well, the Saints, that was their first time, yeah. Back in like 08 or something like 07.
But you just don't see new teams like popping up and winning the chip. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, are you talking about like the Titans and they've never won?
Yeah, I remember they made it and they had a chance to win it. But like, is with the NFL, you just don't, it's like, how do you build a Super Bowl roster? And like the past 2 years or 3 years, you kind of been seeing like the teams change it up a little bit. Like, you know, the way that the L.A. Rams are being built, the Chargers. You have a quarterback, I think Rivers is probably like 37.
He's old. I mean,
put a line in front of him, put a couple quick wide receivers, put a durable running back. You know, it's interesting to see, like, how do you build a Super Bowl, you know, winning franchise?
What would you do? If you had to, where would you start, I should say? Would you agree that you start with a quarterback like everyone says? Because let me give you two examples before you answer. You have Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play. Team is garbage, right? They don't really have a defense. They don't really have like an offensive line. They just have a quarterback, right? Now you have, it's kind of hard to say the Chiefs, the Rams, right? Goff isn't the best quarterback, but they had a great defense last year. Their defense is doing okay now, but they have a run game. So where do you start?
It's tough, you know, because I was thinking at the last couple Super Bowl winners, like, who had a bum quarterback? And no one, if you think of the last, you know, like, of course, Peyton Manning's last year, they were allowed in the defense to win that. But yeah. But he got him there to the chip before without, you know.
Oh, yeah. When they lost to the Seahawks, they were just, man, they're terrible.
So you kind of, you know, I think having a good protection, an offensive line, I think you start there with the offensive line, especially nowadays. You can put a mediocre quarterback back there with a good offensive line.
Right.
You know, a lot of people say Dak Prescott's a mediocre quarterback. And you see what he did his first year with that, like, the best offensive line, you know, ever.
Right.
In the past 10 years or whatever. You saw what he did. We're 13-3 that season. Mm-hmm. Like three interceptions, 25 touchdowns. Or beautiful year. You know what I mean? So I would start with an offensive line because it doesn't matter what quarterback you get. You have like people say, Dak Prescott's a mediocre quarterback. He's not a franchise quarterback. You can get a guy like him, put him back there, that can bring you to the good where you can win some games or even make the playoffs. Or you can start with the top-notch quarterback like you saw that's worked out for, you know, the Rams. They drafted Goff. What was he drafted?
First overall.
Actually... Look at Manziel and Browns. They drafted a quarterback, and it's not a Super Bowl team yet, but they drafted a quarterback first overall. I'm not sure how durable their offensive line is. I can't even name one player on their offensive line.
Well, they had Joe Thomas, and then he retired. That was like their main guy in the offensive line. He was there for like 10 years.
But I think you can start with quarterbacks nowadays because these quarterbacks are changed. You see like the, you know, Johnny Manziel has little wheels. DeSean Jackson has wheels. You know, the Jackson from Ravens, from Baltimore, he has some wheels on him.
Definitely needed that, you know, aspect, though, now. Because even Josh Allen has legs on him.
Yeah. And, you know, Mariota, he can run. You know, Russell Wilson, there we go. He might have been a prototype. Like, hey, we can get a guy that can run, but a guy that can pass, too. you know, he's been doing his thing since 09.
Yeah.
You know, he's been like, every time I look, it's like, damn, the Seahawks in the playoffs again? Or yeah. Seahawks won a playoff game? You know, he was, the guy had like no team for the last like 3 years. The crazy thing is, I was watching, this guy made like a YouTube video about Russell having like no offensive line in like 2017.
He's always running for his life.
He like literally like, you know, guys do like their step backs. I think it's like a four count step back, five count, whatever, step, three step. Step.
Yeah.
This guy was going like 10 steps back and then running to the left and throwing the ball. And he did that for like four straight plays because the defensive end was coming around that corner like that.
Yeah.
The guy had no offensive line. And I think they still made the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know,
my biggest thing with Russell, though, is this, is that I think sometimes I agree they didn't have an offensive line. Especially because if you remember, they traded their Pro Bowl center to the Saints for Jimmy Graham. When that happened, that's when it was starting to decline because he had no protection. But it's hard to protect someone that's running around crazy too, because if you think about it, there's holding plays and things like that because you're thinking he's in the pocket and he's actually running around. Now, it works because if you look at Tom Brady, all he does is he does a five-step drop. His offensive line know to push him to his outsides, and then he steps into the pocket, and he rarely gets sacked. He rarely gets sacked, and that works. It's when you start running all crazy. Yeah, you're improvising, you're making it, but it with Russell, there's been plays where I've seen where he should have just stepped up into the pocket and then just thrown it or just ran, as opposed to going left and right, because now he's putting his offensive line.
Well, that's the curse of having legs, because it's like, oh, maybe I can run left or maybe I can run right. You know, having no legs, you have to stay in your lane. Yeah. So, like, Tom Brady is like, oh, the pocket's collapsing. Let me just take two steps forward and throw the ball.
Right.
But when you have legs, it's like, oh, the pocket's collapsing. Maybe I can run for 10 yards.
Whoop.
Yeah. Tom Brady doesn't have that option. You know, maybe there's a 2-yard run maybe for a first down. He'll maybe try it. You can fall down and get it. But, like, when you have legs, that curse is like, oh, I'm athletic. I can run.
Right.
You know, when you can't run, it's like, we're just going to have to make this work, guys, and I'm going to fucking stay in this pocket until it collapses. Because we're watching him play against the Steelers last weekend, right? And the guy said the same thing you said. He was like, this guy never gets sacked, and he's so slow.
Yeah.
And it's like, he just steps up in the pocket. And you see Ben do it. Ben gets out and run when he has to.
Yeah, but Ben is hard to bring down.
Yes, he would step up in the pocket, and he had a hand on his shoulder, and he would rip him off, and then he would take off for 10 yards. Yeah.
The thing is I with Tom Brady is I think that he, I don't know what it is about the speed or what, that people forget how to properly get rid of the ball. When the pocket collapses, most quarterbacks will step up and they won't throw it away, right? They're in the pocket. Like, they know where the plays are. They know where the guys are running. So instead of throwing it to the ground near someone so they could just move on to the next play, they either intentional ground or they'll throw an interception or they'll take a sack, right? Tom Brady is the only person I've ever seen that even when it's collapsing, he knows he's got an out route or he knows he's got a curl. So he's thrown in that direction, but he throws it at the ground. So that way he doesn't get intentional ground. He doesn't get sacked. He avoids getting hit. And I think that's what's allowed him to be in the game for so long. Well, granted, with the rules not letting him hit the quarterback anymore, but it's things like that he does that I wonder and I look at why are people struggling so much to do and duplicate that?
Well, it's his memory.
Yeah.
It's photographic memories like LeBron James. They study the game so well and they know where like the next play is going to be. I remember LeBron James was calling out it was back in like one of the final games or something like that. One of the players calls out a play and LeBron James is like, oh, it's going to be a pick here. This happening. Defended it. You can hear it on the mic. Stole the ball, went down for a dunk.
Right.
That's with Tom Brady. You know, he's a student, a true professor, a true master of the game. You know, he knows what plays he's calling. Probably with one eye closed, he can probably throw every ball he can throw to his spot. He's like, okay, this guy, like you said, this guy's curling here. This guy's slanting here.
As long as it's inside 20 yards.
We know if he breaks down, he's probably going to go right. You know, so the decision-making is quick. You know, he's a robot. Analyze, go, throw. You know, so you go boom, 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 go. Boom, 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 go. You know, he's comfortable in that situation. But I think his photographic memory, him understanding the field and truly understanding the game, you know, and that's what a lot of people never get to that point. It's like Jamarcus Russell, you think he truly understood it, stand at the game of football. The guy was so freaking talented and athletic that he didn't need to learn how to throw the ball properly.
I think it was Mel Kiper that said that this was the best quarterback he'd ever seen coming out of the draft. And the looked so wrong.
The dude had an arm, though. He was so talented.
Well, you had an arm. He wasn't,
had legs, too.
Yeah, he was leg. He was smart with his play. He wasn't the most accurate, but he was smart with his play.
Or maybe 6'6".
Yeah, he was 6'6". He was a little bigger.
So he was like, and that was like the type of quarterback you want the draft. It was like that Ben Roethlisberger, that tall, that can stand in a pocket, that's big, yeah. And he has an arm. He has a cannon for an arm. But did he honestly understand the game of football?
No,
because... Did he break it down to... Did he know the science behind everything? You know, like a lot of guys just don't get to that point. Like, you got a guy like Tom Brady, he just knows the science of football.
Yeah.
He's a master. I remember he was teaching Cam Newton his rookie year, because they're both signed with Under Armour. He had some Under Armour camp thing. And he was just showing these little drills. Like, where he had him do like three step back and shuffle his feet, and they throw like a little thing at his feet, and you jump over and throw it. Cam Newton couldn't do that at first.
Cam Newton still can't do basic things as a quarterback does.
Yeah, but he
throws it so hard.
Well, that was like the coming from the Brett Favre era. It's like that bullet pass.
Yeah, but it's to the ground.
Yeah, but
or it's high.
You know, I don't put all the blame on him. I put it on his organization. Yeah, you know, he didn't have a support that he needs over there. And I think they should get rid of him. And I think Cam Newton could have been...
You get rid of their coach before you get rid of Cam Newton.
I think he just needs a fresh start. I think he just needs to be for somewhere, him, else, probably, for somewhere yeah. else. It doesn't. He's been in that organization for way too long. People forgot that he brought them to like a 13-3 season, 12-4, 10-6, 11-5. It's like when they're bad, they're bad.
Yeah.
They're like fucking 6-10. Well, but when they're good,
yeah,
they're good. You know,
they've been hyped for the last 2 years with them because they start off good and they do terrible, right? Like when Peyton Manning went to the Super Bowl, I wanted him to win. Not only, I like Peyton Manning, even though he was a Colt, like I like him. He's always been one of those guys. I consider him to be the best quarterback I've ever seen. But I wanted them to win, not only because it was his last year, but I really thought that he'd retire. I felt like he needed to retire. But I also told everyone, Cam Newton will get there again. He's young. He was only like 25 at the time or 26, something like that. And for whatever reason, it's not coming together. He didn't have no receivers, and yet they did good. He had bum D'Angelo Williams and bum Jonathan Stewart, and they were still getting it done. You know, now they have a run game. They still have like the same quality of receivers. They don't really have good receivers, but for whatever reason, they can't seem to get it together, and they fell apart the second half of the season.
It goes to the leadership. It goes to the coaching. And my thing with Cam Newton, this guy's won on every level. He's not one of those quarterbacks that, you know, that was just good in college and then got drafted.
I agree.
Or just, you know what I mean, got drafted late. This guy was like the best player in every level that he played at. He was a 5-star quarterback. I think he was ranked 2 or 3, went to Florida, got in trouble, and he dropped out, went to JUCO.
Yeah.
Now he's the best player in JUCO.
Obviously.
Wins a national championship in JUCO, JUCO player of the year. Goes to Auburn. Became the best player in college football. Wins a national championship. I believe he won the Heisman. Yeah, he won the Heisman. Yeah. National championship. I believe he was a player of the game, etc. Gets drafted. Was he number one?
Oh, man. I don't think so.
Okay.
He was definitely top five, I think.
Top five. Yeah. Gets drafted. And, you know, wins a MVP. You know, takes his team to the Super Bowl. This guy's won on every level. Like, he's been like the best player on every. He's won on every level, and you can't say that for a lot of quarterbacks. And they might win a national high school championship, but a national title. And then if he would have made the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl,
that's the only thing that he's eluded him. He hasn't won a Super Bowl yet.
You got to think he's always excelled in every level that he's played in. You know, he's always came up to the court to play.
Yeah, but some play still has to go on him. I think that there's little things that he does wrong that don't necessarily cost his team games, but they don't put him in ball games either. You know, yeah, his defense isn't what they used to be. They're getting older, they're slowing down, and they get burned often, right? Or, but he can't also rely on McCaffrey to do everything. And then when he does throw down the field, if you really look, I've watched his games this year, he's very inaccurate. He throws, like you said, Brett Favre, but he throws it at the ground or he throws it high, and there's not even really pressure on him. He's just getting rid of it, and he just doesn't look like himself.
I would honestly bet on him if you put him in a different organization.
Which one do you think he would succeed in?
It's hard to say, you know, because the good teams already have good quarterbacks. But
let's just take a. Do you think that he would take the the Browns to the Super Bowl if he was a Browns quarterback? Because they have a good defense.
No.
No.
Okay. I don't, Tom Brady wouldn't can do that.
You don't think so?
No.
No. I don't know, man. I think Tom Brady probably could.
No. I don't think he can.
No.
They need a... Tom Brady needs some players around him.
Right.
I think
Landry and him would be a really good connection.
There's no way Tom Brady's taking the Browns to Super Bowl.
No. Well, yeah. I have a thing that I feel like there's some kind of dark cloud over Cleveland. I feel like people's they go there for their careers to die.
So. You're going to have to be able to run, and he can't run. Johnny Manziel is doing well, but look at majority of his touchdowns. You know, he's out the pocket.
You mean Baker?
Baker, yeah. Yeah, Baker's doing well. He's out the pocket. He's running.
He's doing
making
so good.
Plays happen. Like, he's actually making the plays happen. He's not like letting the game like... The plays are not coming to him. He's making them happen.
Yeah.
It just shows his skills. Tom Brady, if he had a step up in the pocket with the Browns line, he might get knocked out.
I didn't have a lot of respect for him, if you remember, in college. Yeah. I was like, okay, the hype, right? I really am pushing for him now. When he went, I was like, I really hope that he does it. I hope this is the guy for the Browns. The Browns, man, I feel sorry for their fans. They need it. But the difference that I see with Baker than other quarterbacks, like I'm going to take Marcus, for example. Lately, Marcus has been throwing before they come out of their routes. Mm-hmm. Corey Davis, that's the only one he really does that with. He'll throw it while Corey Davis is either on a curl route or on an out route. And by the time he turns, the ball's there. He's been doing that. But the thing is he only does that with Corey, and he only does that on the outside. He never anticipates that kind of stuff on the inside. Or if it's like an option and then or streak, he doesn't throw it. What I noticed with he holds on to it so long. He sees, this is Mario, he sees to make sure the safety's not going to get over, or he sees to make sure there's at least space between the receiver before he even considers throwing it. By then, he has someone in his face, and then he panics, right? What I noticed with, and I've always said this about good quarterbacks, you got to be able to anticipate, you got to know the play. With Baker, they'll be cutting in the middle, and he already read that the safety's too far back, that the guy's cutting, he's going to be able to get the ball there, the guy will catch it, and then he'll get hit. He lets it go. He at least gives him a chance. Even when it's 1-on-1 down the field, if he didn't throw the most accurate ball, at least he's giving his guy a chance. Marcus is too cautious, right? Baker does a really good job of that. That's one thing that I noticed from him, that he does smarter than other rookie quarterbacks, because a lot of rookie quarterbacks just throw, or run. He is always looking downfield. His eyes are always downfield, and his accuracy is pretty impressive.
His confidence came from, a lot of these quarterbacks' confidence they lose their confidence when they go from college to the pro.
Right.
And confidence is like, you know that too. You played sports. It's a huge thing with sports. That's why sometimes you see like the high school basketball player that's amazing. McDonald's All-American, goes to college, and has like a mediocre career. He doesn't have the confidence to play good. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have like that, because a lot of times that make that player that player. Everyone's athletic. Every majority of people can shoot. More people can dunk. Is their confidence. It brings another level. You know, it shapes people. Jordan, Kobe Bryant. You know, like they all like that level of confidence. You know what I mean?
Well, Martavis Bryant is the perfect example. Do you know his story, right? He went to Clemson. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to be the number one guy. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Hopkins was there. Mm-hmm. He was more gifted than DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins put in the work and was the number one. So he was always the better receiver. Martavius all his life was the number one guy. Mm-hmm. He said, I never put in work. I would just show up and play. And I was always the better person because he was so athletic. With Clemson, he had to actually put in the work. So his confidence started to go down. And if you notice, he had a good year with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He got drafted by them. He had a good year with them when he was like the number two guy. And then here comes in Juju Schuster, and he starts tearing up. Again, Martavius Bryant's confidence goes down. He ends up doing good or bad. He gets traded to Oakland. He's a perfect example of one of those guys that he has the talents, the tools to succeed, but without confidence.
It happens. And I think with Baker, the confidence and the energy he had in college, he brought that to the NFL, where he wasn't afraid of anybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Of course, the talent to back it up. And it's cool. When I watch him throw the ball, man, it's kind of like those. I'm not sure if Baker played baseball, but it's kind of like if he, like, oh, man, that guy played baseball.
I think he did, because he looks like he played baseball. I get the same vibe off of that, too.
Baseball players have a certain way they throw the football, certain zip to it.
Yeah.
And I watch him throw the ball, and the way he leads some of his players into the ball, like, perfectly. I'm like, man, this guy had to play baseball. You know what I mean? Like, he's like one of those baseball players. He has that good zip to it. And I wasn't a huge fan of him in college, to be honest. I wasn't either.
With his antics and everything, I was like, oh, this guy's a joker. You know, mm-hmm. He's going to go to the NFL. They're going to eat him up. And again, when he got there, I've never watched Hard Knocks, right? Mm-hmm. But Troy told me about it, so I watched it. I didn't finish it, but I watched it, and I was like, man, I'm really pushing for this mm-hmm. Baker kid. I hope he does it. And he, like you said, he brings that same confidence from college to the NFL, except he brings, it's more of a fiery confidence for his, and he's a team guy. Like, let's go. Well, like, it, you know, seems he's a leader.
Genuine.
Yeah, seems exactly.
Because at first, when I saw his antics, and one of our friends, Ethan, was huge on this guy. So
still probably is.
I was like, this is Johnny Manziel 2.0.
Yeah.
No.
That's exactly what I said too. Yep.
Looks like a rich kid, fucking frat looking guy, fucking ball at football. He has a personality to do whatever he wants. You know what I mean? I think Baker had more personality than Johnny. Johnny was just acting like he was like, I'm the shit. But Baker, he had personality. You see him dancing in videos. You know, he was just a cool cat. And I just wasn't big on him. He was like
a big show off, right?
Show off.
And so.
But then the thing is, and I believe this with almost with everything, you know, when you know someone's story, it's hard to dislike them. You know, right. A true story. And when I heard his story, you know, like I believe he was a walk on or something like that.
The two places. I was the same exact way.
Texas Tech, yeah. I believe. And then he walked on over there, earned a scholarship.
Never got a scholarship?
Mm-hmm. A scholarship. Became the quarterback to like a legendary program. And won a Heisman, took him to college playoffs. Well, when I heard his story, I was like, yeah, it's hard to even, I remember the first time I used to be a big fan of McGregor, then I stopped being a big fan of McGregor. Then I watched a documentary and you hear someone's story. It's hard to not like them when you hear their, you know what I mean? Their story. It's almost like you get to know them and it's like, oh, okay. I see why this is happening now. But you know, going back to Baker, it's like, I'm happy for him. He deserves what he gets. You know, he's putting in the work for it.
And I want to see the Steelers be overtaken for the top crown there. Right? I know it's been Ravens and Steelers, and I know your brother's a Raven fan, right? But to be able to see other outside competition, like when Cincinnati's good, that division's entertaining and it's interesting to watch. But Cincinnati hasn't been good in a couple years. They give you hope and then they don't, right? I can only imagine if the Browns actually get a winning. They have a chance to get a winning season this year, mm-hmm. and that's huge because. There's a lot of talks to say, okay, well, what's the coach's name now? Williams. What's his first name? Do you know what I'm talking about? The coach of the Browns. So Williams takes them. They're a winning streak, all this other stuff, right? They're saying he has more wins under this guy, the interim coach, than Hugh Jackson. But that's his team. You know, it's hard to say. For me, when they say that, it's like, okay, but he drafted these guys. These were his picks. He wanted Baker. He wanted Garrett. He wanted Peppers. He wanted all these guys to play. And he assembled his team, and they're freaking good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're and so they have all the right pieces. They just need that coach to kind of take them to that next level. I don't think it's Williams, so I think he's probably going to do enough to get the starting job. But I really hope they stay away from him because Bruce Arians wants that job, and I think you give it to him.
Well, it's kind of like the Golden State. Like people said they needed Steve Kerr, even though I thought who was the coach before Steve Kerr.
That was Mark Jackson's team. Mark Jackson, yes.
Even though I thought Mark Jackson's was just a 1 year away from the goods before he was going to win.
Exactly.
But, you know, a lot of people say they needed Steve Carr to take him over the hump.
No. Because and the reason, I think this is proof, right? Luke Walton only lost two games when he was their coach when mm-hmm. Kerr had those medical problems and he left. He was like 25-2. Mm-hmm. So they were already on pace to do the same thing, right? Let's say that in a 27-game span, Kerr lost 5 games. It's easy to say, or let's say 10, right? Make it a little more extreme. It's easy to say, oh, well, obviously Luke Walton's a better coach than Kurt. No, right? It's the team that's put together. It's the philosophy. Now you're running a team that was somebody else's. You have all the pieces there. You're just having to tweak a couple little things. Hugh's problem was he was too prideful. It was his way or the highway. So he didn't want to tweak these little things, right? With Williams, he's got a couple things they're tweaking and it's working. Plus they like playing for the guy. Mm. But I thought the same thing. Mark Jackson brought in these guys. These were his guys. They were already headed into that direction, and then you let him go, and then you bring in Kerr, and then all of a sudden Kerr took him that next level? I don't think so.
Well, it's all about timing and opportunity. You saw what Tubby Smith took over Kentucky.
Right.
Someone else's team and took him to the national championship and won.
Yeah, and he was there for years.
Didn't do nothing after, you know. He had Rondo, a bunch of top recruits after, but he didn't do anything after.
Right.
But he took someone else's team that the ex-coach assembled and put together, took them the next year, and won the goods.
Yeah.
It's timing and opportunity. And I think that Steve Kerr had perfect timing and had the perfect opportunity. Because imagine if Steve Kerr was with the Suns.
No, take him to the Lakers. Walton's there now, right?
Yeah.
Imagine they would have somehow kept Luke and sent, and Kerr would have taken the Laker job. Do you think he would be doing as good with the Golden State Warriors? That no, right? Mm-hmm. He'd probably be doing the same thing that Luke Walton's doing. Mm-hmm. Figuring it out. Trying to figure out what his lineup is. Seeing what works. Now that you got the king in, what's going to work? Well, who do we put in? Who can play well with him? How do they play together? It's things about figuring it out.
He already had
a template. Built
car.
Yeah.
So the car's already built. You know what I mean? With the Lakers. Just had
to start it pretty much.
Yeah, to start it and go. Yeah. But with the Lakers, it's like, oh, well, we need to build this car. Let's figure out what's the best way to run this car, mm-hmm. how fast it's going to be, what are we going to do, details. Right. When you already have a built car, it's like, huh, you know what? I think this car probably suits better on the road than off-roading because it's a sports car. Right. So let's just run this way and see how we can win. You know, you had Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, Draymond. You already had a built car. You know what I mean? A car that's, okay, cool. We just drive it on the road because we're not going to go off-road with it because that's going to fuck up our team or fuck up our car. But the Lakers is like, we don't know our identity yet. So it's like, is this car going to be an off-road vehicle or a sports car? How are we going to do this? Is it going to be a raw team, rugged? Are we going to win by defense or are we going to win by offense? And, you know, that's what for any coach going into a situation like the Lakers is bad. You know what I mean? You saw what Brad Stevens went until, you know, rebuilding Boston. They weren't super great the first year, 2 years he was there. You know, it takes time to build these situations for any coach. Any coach. You can get lucky like Greg Popovich did, and he had the Twin Towers, and then he had a guy like Duncan for 20 years. They drafted Manuel Ginobili, had him for about 10-plus years. Drafted Parker, had him for like 10, but they had their foundation set, and they just keep on, you know, drafting new players. You got Kawhi for a couple of years.
I don't know. I think Pop's a bad example because he did have Duncan, and he knew to build around Duncan. He knew, I have this guy, I have that guy, I'm going to build around these guys.
But they got that draft pick. You know what I mean? So they got that number one overall pick that year, which was, mm-hmm. they actually shouldn't have got that pick according to the, I don't remember it too much, but I remember something being the draft being rigged or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had like a 1% chance to get that pick, and they got it. So he had So for him to have that pick and to make the right choice on that pick, you know, of course, you had Dave Robinson there. I was towards in his career, but he made the right choice on the pick. And then from there, he springed a great franchise. You know what I mean? Phil Jackson.
There's talks about him coming back, that he's been at the Laker practices and things like that. Is he really considering coming back?
I don't know what he can do for the team right now.
He's not that guy anymore, right? Well, is that the same coach? His motivation isn't there?
His offense is outdated to the game right now. And he just doesn't have the energy. You know, it takes energy to be coaching a guy like LeBron. It takes energy to be able to teach young players like Lonzo and Kuzma and Ingram. You know, it takes time.
Does he remember that these stars are prima donnas and they need certain kind of treatment and things like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no, I don't think, you know, it'd be good to have him around the practices and stuff like that for his input because he is the Zen master. But I just don't think that if he was trying to coach,
He was trying to coach home games, not away. Like, there's too much to, like, if he's, I don't think it's a good thing. No. You have someone like Luke Walton that was in his system for years that understands how he coaches. Not the same guy, but I think the philosophy's there. So if it doesn't work, you don't just go with a better version of that. You obviously got to make a change in different direction. I think you stick with Luke. I think he's figuring it out. He can put it together. I think he will. And if he doesn't do it, then, you know, you have to cut ties sooner than later. I get that because LeBron's only getting older, right? But would you cut him at the end of the season if you don't have the season that you want? Or would you wait maybe half the season until next year? Because I don't think you can wait for 2 full years to see if that coach is going to work out.
LeBron, he's proved he wants to coach that he wants to coach the game. But he can win without a coach.
Well, I mean, he did with Tyronn Lue, you know? He can do it.
David Black. I mean, LeBron's the coach on the floor. And, like, there's certain times this season where Luke is calling out plays. LeBron's, no, I'm call it my play because he sees it differently on the floor. He doesn't really need that coach. You know, I think the younger players need a coach more than he does.
Right.
You know, but I don't know. I would stay. I would stay with them for the rest of the season. Would I cut ties with them? Well, it just depends how the season goes. Right now, we're number four. We're three games.
You guys are four, huh?
We're three and a half games back from number one seed.
We you know, we've played you guys twice. We hold both victories.
Yeah, you beat us twice, and that's...
Gordon, we talked about potential. Gordon is one of those guys that they drafted strictly on potential. This is his fifth year.
He's 23 years old. He's still young.
I think, that's crazy. Yeah, his fifth year, he's 23. But this is finally the year that that potential is paying off. Do franchises have the patience to... No, I don't think they do. We had to. And everyone else, because we had multiple coaches, they all had to believe that this guy was going to develop into something because he held such high trade value and they could have easily have traded him. At one point, I don't know if you remember this, 2 years ago, there was a leak of one of their meetings, the coaches' meetings, and on the board, on their whiteboard, they had Gordon under the trade section.
Wow.
And he still re-signed with us. And I think I told your brother this, that we're not a market that anyone wants to go to. Right, you can only go to Disney World for so long, right? You don't want to live there. And that's really all we have to offer. We have Hurricanes and we have Disney World. You have to hold on to the people you draft. If you have someone that might be a star, you have to hold on to him. Gordon, obviously you have to hold on to him. Vooch, I think you have to hold on to him. Fournier, we go back and forth on Fournier, right? There's times where I'm like, oh, he does good. But then there's other times where I'm like, he's more of a liability than anything. Now, I think Fournier is one of those guys that could flourish in one of those teams like Golden State, because he's not going to be, he has other guys to really defend. He doesn't have to be that main defender. But on a team like ours, we're built around not really defending, and that's why a lot of teams score points on us. We're a better offensive team this year, but we don't defend that well. Now, going back to like the whole potential thing, let's take the 76ers. 76ers drafted a bunch of centers in 3 years in a row, right? They were hurt. They couldn't play, whatever. They ended up only keeping one out of all those, Embiid. They let go of Okafor and they let go of Noel.
But that's all you need, you know, out of...
But you don't think, you don't look at it like wasted drafts? Like they could have gotten other guys?
That happens every three drafts where you don't have a good draft.
Right.
Like they had this, I can't remember the guy's YouTube channel, but he was breaking down all the drafts from like 2015, 2010. And like showing what players are still in the league, what players made, you know, all-star games, potential MVPs, and there's a lot of broken drafts. Like, normally, like, players outside the, like, what he did was the best player for every draft number. So, who's the best player, number one, for the last, like, 10 years? Number two. And, like, there's not that many good draft players after six. Like, that's six true. Of 13. Like, you have Mitchell from a couple years ago.
Yeah, but like 16th or something like that.
But you have guys like that. But there's, like, a...
It's rare.
Anyone out the top five, it's rare. But then you get these weird guys that are like in the, like the 20 to like the 28 range that are like becoming all stars. Like, and you, all you really need is to hit that pick once out of 5 years.
Yeah,
once you get a guy like Kobe Bryant, once out of 5 years, once out of 10 years, you just need a guy like that that can change
like once in a 10 year
the culture or even change the conference. Kobe Bryant changed the whole freaking Western Conference. Made seven NBA finals in what 17 years, 20 years he played.
Yeah.
He changed the Western Conference. A player like that can change the whole conference. LeBron James, 8 in the East, took away championships from other guys.
He's been to the last, I think, 8 in a row, right?
Yeah. So you made 9 finals altogether. So that's taking away championships from other organizations. So like a guy that's, so you, all you really need is to hit that luck bucket once every 10 years.
Right.
You've seen the Cleveland Cavaliers drafted DeJuan Wagner before LeBron, and he was supposed to be like the savior before LeBron. This guy scored like, you know, 60 points in high school. I think he played 1 year in Memphis, did a great year, drafted number 3 or number 2 overall with Cleveland. He was supposed to be the savior before LeBron even got there. So you just need to hit that jackpot once in that 10-year span, and you're good for 20 years. You're good for 10 years or 15 years.
You got to add to that, though.
When was the last good draft pick that the Magic had?
The last good draft pick?
Like, great. What did he do for that franchise in his, like, 7 years that he played there?
Took us to the championship, kept us in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then, like, that was big.
But since then, have you guys hit?
No.
But you guys are waiting for that next one.
Right.
And when you get that one, you're going to be taken care of for
the problem,
7 to 12 years.
Well, I told your brother this. The problem with that is that... I think it's easy. They say there's a lot of pressure, right? But I think it's easy to draft the guy between 1 and 5. I think from 6 on, like from 6 to 11, maybe 6 to 12, I think is the hardest picks to have. The reason why I say that is because from 1 to 5, you kind of almost know who the top 5 guys are. After that, you have a choice. Do you draft what you need? Like, let's say what you need, you could easily get him in the 30th, as the 30th pick of the first round, right? Do you trade out and look bad amongst your fans to get that, you know, because you know that person's, not going to go? Or do you draft the next best available person, regardless of position, regardless of if your team needs them? I think a lot of teams do that. That's what I think Philly did, right? They drafted the next possible person or best possible person. And a lot of teams do that. And I think that's why they miss, because instead of just saying, okay, we always said we were going to get this guy, we knew that this guy was going to drop to mid round, we can just get him now. But then if you draft him 20 picks too early, and you're going to look bad if he doesn't work out, right? I think that there's that pressure between 6 and 12 that I think is the hardest picks, and just for those reasons alone.
There's not that many. All the players are good, but there's not that many all-star caliber players.
That's why I say 1 through 5 seems very easy.
In a draft.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've seen it. I was watching the all-star game from 2012. Has the faces changed that much? Kind of. A couple players.
Not really.
But like, see, like, because you had that, okay, our wave of watching basketball. Melo, Kobe, LeBron, or actually before that, McGrady, Iverson, Kobe, Shaq. And then it came with the next wave, Wade, Melo, LeBron, Chris Paul. And then the next wave, KD, Westbrook. So now you're just chopping, pushing those guys, they're getting pushed up. So KD, Harden, those guys are that wave that's going to be the 30 plus now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? In the next 2 years. Right. And they're going to be the older guys. And then the wave behind that, which would be
Donovan Mitchell, Damian Lillard.
No, that's Donovan Mitchell is the young wave.
Oh, okay, young.
So it's D. Lillard,
Westbrook.
Westbrook is kind of in that older age.
He's 27, I think.
No, Westbrook is 29.
Damn.
So he's kind of like, it's like D. Lillard. I don't even know who's like the mid to late. I guess you can say Paul George, Kyrie, yeah. Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Guys like that are
DeMarcus Rosen.
Are in the little bit, DeMarcus Rosen, a little bit younger than these guys.
Yeah.
And then the ones.
Go to the younger one, that like the Donovan Mitchell, who is a part of that? That Embiid.
Oh, Ben Simmons, Donovan Mitchell.
That's going to be Kuzma, the golden area, right?
Kuzma will be a tough all right, player.
Calm down there, Laker man. Kuzma,
come on. You don't think so?
it's too early to tell.
He's scoring at his league average right now. He's only at second year in the league.
My thing is, he reminds me so much of Ryan Anderson. Ryan Anderson looked great for us, for the Magic, and then we traded him off because he doesn't really do much on the defense.
Comparison. Anderson and the athleticism is just two different.
Yeah,
worlds.
Yeah, but I'm saying that the style of offensive play is almost the same.
Kuzma is a little more active.
Kuzma like lately has been driving it exactly. He's been driving more lately.
He's been dunking the ball lately.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But if you look at his first year, I haven't seen a lot this year. I've just seen this lately stuff, right? But like his first year, in the beginning of the year, I saw a little bit. He was still like that shooting. So, and I told
you, mid-range 3-point guy. He didn't have his feet under him.
Yeah.
You know, now, see, like I said, that's what happens with confidence. His feet
If he could turn into like a, and I'm not saying that he's going to turn into this caliber, but this kind of style of play, if he can turn into like a Dirk Nowitzki or even like a Sean Marion kind of player, because Sean was around, I think he'll be all right. Right? Where he doesn't settle for the three, he does dribble, he's kind of aggressive, and he does, I think he'll be all right. But it's hard for me to tell. I think
he has early. Him and Dirk are not a good comparison because he's just a lot more athletic.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let me put it to you this way. The reason why I don't consider him like that is because Donovan Mitchell can almost carry a team. We see that Damian Lillard already does that. He's not a part of that, right? But Ben Simmons has enough physical talent to make people around him good. I think if you take everyone away, I don't think Kuzma can do the same thing that these guys can do.
Kuzma was our best player in our team last year that won, you know, we won 36 games last year.
Right.
You know, the Jazz won, 40? I think Jazz had 8 or 9 games more than us.
Right.
And they had a more veteran team than us last year. And Kuzma, of course they did. They had Ricky Rubio. They had Derek Favors, who's a good veteran forward.
Those guys weren't like, yeah, they had more veteran. You're right. They were a freshly put together team, though, also.
Yeah, but they had, you know, probably one of the best centers in the West, Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
He was defensive player of the year last year, I believe. You know what I mean? So, like, you had a guy that was a double-double machine, averaging 3 blocks, with a rookie point guard, with a veteran point guard, with Ricky Rubio. You had George Hill. You have a solid team. And then
George was better for them than he was for
you. Kuzma. Have Kuzma on a team that's really green. You know what I mean? Team that is so young. They don't even know. Lonzo Ball hitting, scoring 31 night and then going for zero the next night.
Yeah.
They don't know what the hell they're doing. You know what I mean? And Kuzma was our best player last year. And we won about 35 games. And I think, I'm pretty sure, I don't have it in front of me, but the gap was about 8 or 9 games between the two teams.
I know it's like 10 or under. I do know that.
And yeah. So it wasn't a big difference. They had a better team. Of course, he averaged 20 points. Kuzma, what, 17?
I don't know what he averaged. I thought he averaged under 15.
But Kuzma, you know, being drafted so late, too. You know, even though Mitchell was drafted 13, Kuzma was like 28 or something like
that. That was another hit.
Came, yeah.
Because he's doing good for being in the second year. I agree. Mm-hmm. But you know how it is with those young guys. They'll hit somewhere, and then they can't seem to just break barrier.
But he's breaking that barrier. He's LeBron's. He's our second best player on the team. That's number four. We're one game off of the what's or being number one. I know it's early. One game off being number one for the West, and he's LeBron's second best player, most trusted player.
Yeah,
LeBron trusts Kuzma.
I want to see. Yeah, I want to see how the season goes on because it's hard to say now because even the damn Clippers were number one like a couple weeks ago. You know what I mean? And they have no stars, and you know they're not going to be there at the end of the season.
See, now you're getting to the part of the season where you start weeding out the teams that are really bad.
Exactly.
You know, so it. This next curve, this next turn is going to say, okay, oh, who's really the best team?
Yeah.
So I think right now it's Oklahoma City who's number one. But now the more games you play, the more people get their feet settled and people come off injuries. We're going to see. Clippers are probably not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because in between, I think it's four through like seed 12.
Just like a couple games.
Like a game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like
I think the Nuggets will make it this year.
That's a dangerous team.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's a dangerous team. They have a good 3-point shooting team. One of the best centers, active center, good coach, young. And they're still missing, you know, Isaiah Thomas, mm-hmm. who come in and score some points. And the rookie, you know, name again, guy from Missouri.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. The guy we wanted, Porter.
Yeah.
Michael Porter. Is that his name?
Michael Porter. Yeah, so he was supposed to be number one overall draft pick. He was a number one overall player.
He would have if he didn't get hurt. I think so.
He didn't play. He didn't play college. His whole year, yeah.
But that's who I wanted the Magic to draft over Mo Bamba. I think Mo Bamba's still a joke. I don't think he's going to turn into that guy. He reminds me of like Noel, right? Gnarls Noel, whatever his name is.
You don't.
What was
Embiid? You mean, but it's.
But he was brought in to, because we have defensive efficiencies. We are not rim protecting the team. Vucevic isn't that guy. He's an offensive guy. He really doesn't protect the rim. We don't have any interior defensive presence. He was brought in to change that. I know it's early, but I've seen this too many times. They brought in a guy like Jonathan Isaacs to do that, right? Mm-hmm. He's not panning out. They brought in a what was that bus from Toronto? We paid him all that money.
Oh, Mbaka.
Mbaka.
But right? He's playing good now.
Is he? I don't even know who he's with.
He's with Toronto. He's back with Toronto.
He went back to Toronto? Oh, my gosh. Okay. So with him, he didn't really pan out. We paid him $74 million. We ate Mozgov.
No, you're thinking about Ben.
No, it's not Ben.
No. What's that guy's name?
Yeah, the dude that was from Toronto. We got him.
No, it's not Ibaka. It's another
guy. No, Ibaka. No, yeah. He's with Toronto. Yeah.
Bimbalau or something like that.
Something weird like that.
Yeah, he used to play for the Hornets.
Yeah, he used to play for Toronto.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm. We got him not off a trade. We got him off a free agency. But I know you're talking about.
So
him.
But he was drafted by the Hornets.
Maybe, I don't know. The dude that says he's 25, but his hairline says he's older.
Yeah.
So we paid him $74 million, didn't pan out. We do all these things in order to get a rim protector and it doesn't pan out. For me, to have a guy like him, he's got wingspan, all this, he's skinny, he's afraid of contact. Mm-hmm. How are you going to have a guy that wants to protect the rim if he's afraid of contact? Even in college, he only excelled or had his highlights against teams that weren't very good. Mm-hmm. Against the teams that were good, he was non-existent. Mm-hmm. And his shooting, especially, they say, oh, he can shoot from three, all this and that. He only averaged like 5 points. now you're putting all your chips on this guy that you think is good when a guy like Michael Porter was out there, who is a known scorer, which is what we need. We could have continued to do what we were doing free agency to get those defensive help, but we needed help on the offensive side. And really, we needed someone that was going to spark the offense, and we don't have that. We don't have really a point guard. We have DJ Augustine, which is a filler for now, but maybe get a guy like Porter, depending on how he does, maybe you can have a small forward like him dribbling up the ball. The Magic have been known to do that. I felt like we would have benefited more in the long run from having him. Again, I could be wrong. It's still early, but I've not been happy with the Mo Bamba pick even till today.
I think it when it comes with player development, it's going to take years with this guy. Still young. You see it with Aaron Gordon. He's 23, 24 now, right, and he's finally looking like how you guys wanted him to look when he was 18. Got to remember, these guys are teenagers. Then everybody's LeBron or Zion Williamson, or, you know, when he's 23 years old, I think that he'll start showing. And did you draft him to be the best center in the NBA? Did anyone ever project that? I don't think so.
No, we drafted him because we said that he was going to protect the rim, and the fact that he can stretch to the three-point line is unheard of.
But see, if he can do that and be at the lead average of rebounding and scoring for his position, and maybe be above average for blocks, turn into maybe a Rudy Gobert.
But the reason he's not going to do that is because Vucevic is our starting center. There's no scenario where we play both of them because Gordon is our power forward.
Well, Vucevic, he's probably going to get moved. You know,
he likes being with us. The only reason he would move is if we trade him.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what's going to happen. You know, you're not going to waste. What pick was that? Five,
six. We've been had six for the last 3 years.
Okay, six. Six is at that area, but you guys are probably trade him.
Well, this is what I wanted, okay? And this is why I wanted Porter, because they talked about trading Vucevic, so his morale's got to be down a little bit, because all they keep talking about is trade him when he's like always one of our leading scorers. Now, if you're going to get rid of him, I see why you went with why you would consider a guy like Mo Bamba, because you want to replace him before you get rid of your center, but you want to replace him with a guy that's going to defend. Now, I think we could have got a guy like Mo, like what he's doing for us or what he's going to be doing in the next couple years, from free agency, paid someone a little, not even a lot of money to do what he's doing, but then we can replace his offensive points, Vucevic offensive points, with a guy like Michael Porter. Mm-hmm. You see, so it balances itself out. You're trying to get a real center in a league that doesn't really can function without that kind of traditional center. Mm-hmm. And what they need now is a guy that can, a two-way player or a wing player, you know, something like that, which Michael was. And that's why I wanted him. I thought that they messed up.
Well, they're not getting a real center. I think they look at Embiid, say, we want that. It's like that new sports car on the lot. It's like, oh shit.
Yeah, good luck, though.
I think I like that car. I want that brand new 2018 car. They look at Embiid, it's like, you know, we want a guy like that. And he's shown, other than the weight, you know, he's a lot smaller or skinnier than him. He can shoot mid-range, like Embiid. He can pass well. He has good defense. Of course, this guy can jump out the building.
I don't think his defense is that good. And he's very soft.
See, that's the thing. Player development. Are you guys developing him right? You know, like, it took Embiid, 2 years just to hop on the court? You know, if you put him on the court when he was so green, who knows what would have happened? You know, if he would have been in Joel Embiid, the rookie of the year, your rookie of the league or whatnot. You know, Ben Simmons, you know, he was injured that whole first year. You know, they've developed him well. You know, Marco Fultz, that's another story. But, you know, it's player development. You know what I mean?
I think he can do good if he left.
If you would have put Aaron Rodgers, his rookie year out there, said, this is your team now. Brett Favre's retired. He's done. Would he be the Aaron Rodgers he is today? No, looking, we don't never know. But we do know that he was benefited under Brett Favre for a couple years.
And I think you do need that. I agree. You do need that veteran presence to kind of give you the insights.
And the thing is, with us, I remember Drew had made a comment about, like, can't judge a player, because I was talking about Brandon Ingram, his third season now. Damn. Yeah. That was his first year. And I was like, man, that doesn't have it. Can't judge a player at 18 years old. And I said, you can. This is called the NBA. We judge LeBron at 17.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant was 17 years old when he came to the league. Melo was 19. Rejudge. First sight, we're perception.
Yeah.
And we are quick to judge and quick to think. You know what I mean? And we'll take the fucking bullshit later on. you can judge a guy that early.
Well, it all depends on how the media reflects him. If the media makes him out to be this next great player and they don't do that, yeah, we judge him.
When you're drafted that high, you are.
You have to be, yeah.
You are. When you're drafted number six, it's like, that is the number six. That was our first overall pick because out of the last 70 players in the draft, he was the best guy
right
for us.
Yeah.
So he was your number one overall pick. And so...
Which is so funny you mention it because, you know, Lakers aren't my team. And I look at a guy like Brandon Ingram and I'm like, give him time, you know? But when it comes to my team, I'm like, you know, I don't like him. So it's funny that you mention that because you're not a fan of him, right? What about Caldwell Pope or whatever his name is?
So, like, Brandon Ingram, I think he's a great player. I don't think he's going to be as good as a lot of people project him out to be, you know?
What would you compare him to? Like, what would you want him to be? What kind of player would you like him to be? Compare him to someone that you'd be happy if he reached those.
He's not going to be a superstar, I'll tell you that. He'll be good if he became Paul George, maybe an all-star guy, 20 points, 6, 7, 8 rebounds, consistently a night, you know, defender, plays both sides of the court. I think that he doesn't have an all-star ceiling. I think Lonzo Ball, superstar ceiling. I think Lonzo Ball is our only guy with the superstar ceiling.
He needs to figure out his confidence with his shooting. I think LeBron's going to help him with that.
LeBron can help
him. But in college, he had an early shot, but he went in. You just got to do it. You just got to...
But if you don't get rid of him, because, you know, we're all in this trade talk, and if they're going to come for players that are coming from Lonzo,
yeah,
they're going to come for him. And they're going to come for all three. Brandon Ingram. I think his best seasons, he would average, you know, 23 points a game. And he'll level off and come down to 17, 16, whatever he's doing now.
Right.
But I don't see him as a superstar. He can't lead a team by himself.
No.
Kuzma, I think Kuzma will, you know, he'll probably finish this season averaging over 21 or something like that.
I think so.
He's already averaging like 18.
It's just a long season, you know?
Yeah, but he's our second best player, unless we trade for somebody.
There's talks you guys are going to wait for Kawhi. And I think you guys may.
I don't know what he's going to do.
It seems like Toronto treats their stars pretty well, though, because...
he's hanging with Drake, you know?
Well, he didn't want to... what's his name? DeMar DeRozan didn't want to leave Toronto. Well, he was heartbroken.
It's a good city.
Yeah.
It's a good city.
And I think it'll work out for him. But his big thing was he wanted to go to L.A. Now, George didn't go. Would it be bad if Kawhi didn't go either?
Oh, if Kawhi stayed in Toronto. Yeah, I think Toronto, that's the only basketball team, NBA team in the whole country.
Yeah.
You know, so you just get tons of love. You know, you got people from Vancouver liking you.
Yeah.
I don't even know the other cities over there, but you have people loving you. It's the only NBA team in that whole country.
Yeah.
You know, they show love. And Canadians are just nicer than Americans anyway. You know what I mean? Support their team, win or lose.
Yeah.
You got Drake going to your games and, you know, Justin Bieber. You know, so like, it's cool up there. It's different. You know, you're out of America. It's like, oh shit. Yeah. It's like a 365-day vacation.
But for some people, it might not be L.A. Like, yeah, I'm big in Canada, right? But I'm not big in, like, my hometown or my home state of L.A. or California. Some people, they need that. They could be huge. Like, if Connor was big here but not that big in Ireland, I bet you it wouldn't be the same thing for him, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's how it is for, like, Kawhi because he's from California. I think mm-hmm. he wants to be looked at like that, like they look at him in Toronto over there. Now, I think it'd be a good move if he stayed because it seems like he fits. And like you said, the
Kawhi wouldn't. It's weird. He's from LA, but I don't see him as.
I know because he's like not the same kind of guy. He's very soft spoken. Yeah, he doesn't.
LA stars are different. Like yeah. Kobe Bryant was like, talk about, you know, I mean, drawing like the right card for that city.
Yeah.
You know, he had the flair. He had the smile. Dude speaks multiple languages. Married, you know, Hispanic lady, you know, so like he had like what LA was. Shaq had the big personality, where you know what I mean, like
big market personality.
And Kawhi just doesn't seem to have it. Like Toronto, he seems like a Canadian.
He has a Milwaukee attitude.
Huh? Milwaukee, just fucking quiet, just like let me go out and play basketball.
Yeah, always in the house,
hard worker. You know what I mean? Fucking cleaning the yard and shit. You know what I mean? Like he's one of those type of guys, but he doesn't seem like an LA type of guy. I think that he might stay in Toronto.
Because he should.
They're going to make the finals. They're a better team than Boston right now.
Right now.
And I think they'll be a better team in the future because of his. Hey, people forgot he's an NBA champion. And he's a finals MVP. You know what I mean? People forgot about that. He has experience. You know what I mean? Of course, Irving has experience, but it's nowhere near the experience that Kawhi has.
I'm curious to see that because, you look at the East, there's not really much going on over there. Magic, I don't think we're a good team. We're probably going to be an A seed. I've always said that, like, since the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. Would we be worthy of an A seed? No, because we're not going to do anything. We're not going to make any kind of splash mm-hmm. in the playoffs. But as weak as it is, that's probably what it is. Washington, I can't believe how terrible they are. I thought the three best teams in the East were Toronto, Washington, or Boston mm-hmm. and Washington. Now that's looking, you know, like it's not. But those two battling, I remember they swept them last year, didn't they? Didn't the Boston?
Yeah, they did. They did.
Right. It was Cleveland that swept Toronto, right?
Yeah.
Boston played Washington. They beat them by, they won like six or five or something. But we didn't get to see, that's right. We didn't get to see the Toronto and Boston series. I think that's going to be a 6-7 game series. And I'm excited for that because I think both teams they're on the up and up, both of them are. Mm-hmm. And I think Boston will figure out by the time they get to the end. And
I think Boston just has too many gears for the fucking speed of the car.
Yeah.
So many fucking people in that fucking team.
Yeah.
You just need fucking four gears you can go. You had so many fucking guys come off the bench. You're trying to make people happy. It's like, you need a bench, but you need players that know their role. You know, guys that come in this rebound and shit. Now you got guys come off the bench just trying to shoot mid-range. Guys shooting three-pointers out of nowhere. You know, you need players that know their position. There's too many people on that roster.
They're trying to please too many people, I think.
They play the same position.
With minutes and everything. Yeah, they're trying
minutes to minutes and all that. And it's, like I said, it's too many gears on a car that only needs four. You know what I mean? You got fucking eight guys. You got dudes coming off the bench shooting threes. It's right. Like, come on. Like we need guys that's going to defend. We need guys that are going to pass. We're going to need guys that got to rebound. And that's all they do. We don't need guys that go out and shoot the ball.
Yeah. You have your scores.
You already have your scores. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, perfect team. Miami had their two top scorers with LeBron and Wade. You know? Chris Bosh.
Bosh was more of a rebounding guy.
He took his rebound, defend, and score my 15 points a game. You got Mike Miller shooting threes. You know, Shane Battier hitting wide open shots defending. You need a team. You don't need seven guys that can put up freaking 13 points a game.
Right.
One dude has an off night, but he's still jacking up shots. You need a guy who's like, okay, I'll take open shots. But if I'm not open, I'm going to pass the ball instead of pick. But you guys is like,
identity that way, because if, like, Kyrie's going to dribble, penetrate, right, mm-hmm. and then possibly dish out.
Yeah.
He wants to dish out to the actual guards and the people that are going to shoot, right? Now, if you're, if that's not you, if you're a center trying to dish out, he's going to think twice before he dishes out to you, because he's going to consider just taking it to the lane because of that.
Yeah. 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 You know, you're totally right. And I just think it's just, like I said, it's too many. It's one ball for seven dudes that can average 20 points a game. It's not going to happen in this league. They need to start cutting that roster down. Start trading.
Yeah.
You know what trade I would do? And it's a bad, kind of bad trade for Boston. Better trade for, actually, I don't even think Golden State can afford him. But I would trade Hayward or Draymond straight up.
Ooh, but then, I don't know. They lose some interior defense, I think, if they do that. They're not really built as a defensive team, right? But they need Draymond on the defensive end.
The thing is, like I said, if you look at Draymond's stats this year, it's not that good.
His defense, the only thing that is, because I've seen.
But what's defense when a dude still gets 26 points a game on you? Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's maybe a 4 point swing. I guess a 4 points can be a game changer.
That's what they do now. But they base the good defense off of highlighted or circumstantial defenses. If they score a bunch of points on you all game, but in the fourth quarter, you make some key blocks or you make some key steals or whatever.
Yeah.
Then you had a good night.
I just don't think that he's that big of a game changer now. You know, at one point I thought, you know, Draymond was the second best player on the Warriors, and he was so valuable. Actually, that, remember Ken?
Yeah.
He was saying that. And I actually, that's one thing I probably agree with this dude about. But now it's a different game. If KD stays, how much defense do you need to win a game when you're putting up 128? When they're beating teams now this year, okay, 2 years ago they had, I think, they're the best defense in the league, right? They're beating teams now this year. Teams are still putting up 110.
That's 112, what I was going to say. Their defense isn't there. They need to put up 128 in order to win, because their teams are putting up like 120.
And if Draymond was such a haggler on defense, and how the referees are calling a game now, he can't be the defensive player he was 2 years ago, when he was locking down, you know, these top superstar players.
Right.
And that, and I'll take myself back. I'm wrong. You know, if you change 4 point, 6 point minus for a guy that night, say the guy's averaging 30 points a game, 28 points a game, and dude only scored 22, I guess that's big.
Especially 6 points, in a series. Yeah. Like, if you shut him down in the last minute and you did that, it's huge going into the next game.
But see, in that, okay, I can see, yeah. So I take myself back a little bit because it kind of contradicts myself from like the Boston standpoint when I was saying there's too many gears, you know, for a card that only needs four.
Right.
You know, so he plays his part, you know, even though he's a terrible shooter and his offense, I don't know what happened to it this year, but he plays his part.
It's a confidence thing because even when he was shooting threes and he said he was like helping out with them when they won the series the first year.
Dude, he had like 32 points one game.
But even when he was shooting threes, I felt like he was still suspect, right? But yeah. It was just a thing of confidence because he was taking threes with the players he had. You had Tristan and you had Stephen. And you were taking threes or you were taking shots with like 30 seconds to go in the game to tie it or to take the lead. He was doing that based off of confidence, right? They had some understanding on the team. You bring in a superstar, and I say superstar because that's what Kevin Durant is, you know, kind of changes the mantra. It's like, okay, well, yeah, we passed a lot. We're going to do this. He's open. And they still have that, but I think that ultimately affected Draymond's confidence because he doesn't play like he used to. He doesn't take the shots that he used to. And now it's more like he forces things up. And I think it's out of frustration because he realizes, I haven't shot that much this game. I'm going to just put up some shots. And then his shots have been terrible.
Well, it's like, how much higher can that team even go? Yeah. Like, you won your first two series. I think they swept. Did they sweep them twice? Or did Cleveland won one game?
Yeah. Cleveland won one game.
Yeah, but it's like, you guys already won the championship twice. Like, it's, you win another one with KD. Your team already has that tainted paint on it, you know what I mean, and everyone that's alive this year that watched you guys play live, you're gonna have that tainted paint on you.
Yeah,
and even if you guys win this year, and if DeMarcus comes back and has a good showing, you guys are just tainted. You know what I mean? This, I don't know. It's like if people thought it didn't feel good when LeBron James won with Bosh and Wade. Imagine how the feeling of this Warriors team winning with KD. Mm-hmm. You know, Bosh and Wade. Boogie.
I mean, he won't play too
well. But still, but even last year when they're playing and they swap them, I'm like, stupid. Like, how would you get the, like, I'm all about like dominance and I like, you know, the good teams and I like to see my team win. But when a team's winning that bad, you know what I mean? And you knew the team was going to win and this is not competitive.
Well, that's why I just think
it's not. Not a good look for the league.
That's why I think that the NBA is...
Two superstars is cool. You know, and that's like the classic. They have two guys.
Three max kind of thing.
Yeah, three. You know, it's like, oh, man, this is like a super team.
Yeah.
But when you have four guys that start in the All-Star game,
and
that's your starters...
And if Boogie would have played, he probably would have been the five. He probably would have been number five.
That is just nuts, man. Yeah. It's just hard for me to... I don't even like playing with that team, like on 2K and stuff. I mean...
Well, everyone picks them. And it's like, really, like, now that's what you're going to? You're going to that? Like, people are now Warrior fans. How many Warrior fans did you see when they were number 8 seed with Baron Davis and Jason Richardson, all those guys? Mm-hmm. There were no Warrior fans, especially here. Now they're all over the place, right? Yeah. You see them everywhere.
It's funny. It's more girls. I noticed women. Definitely they girls. Fucking you. Who do you like? You know, Stephen? Or they hit Stephen Curry.
Yeah,
Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry. He's like my favorite. He's so hot. Like, it's like it's almost like the Oscar De La Hoya effect, like when boxing, like when women, they said there was a 3-1 women watching his fights than men, like live in the stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like a lot of his fights, there were like a 3-1 ratio of women over guys watching the fights.
Right.
Because they just want to see him freaking play.
Yeah.
That's you know, I was at a bar, I think I was with Furman, and we are talking to these girls and like, oh, like they're watching the game. Like, you guys are Warriors fans. Oh no, Stephen Curry's so hot. And three girls watching the game. You guys come here to watch the game. Oh yeah, they're playing tonight. Oh shit. Do you know their record? No. Oh, interesting. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But you know who's hurt right now? Who's on the injured list?
Yeah.
Well, that you, one guy.
Can you name another player?
Yeah.
I know they have a Jackson or a Washington.
Yeah, they have to have a Johnson, Jackson, or Washington, right? It's like, no, they don't.
Just think about some football player they dated in the past, their last name. And it's like, he has this. All right, so one last subject before I have to leave. Let's talk about Pacquiao and Broner.
Okay, oh, you know what? That's actually a good one. Okay, so here's my thing on it. You can give me your thoughts after this. Okay, I think it's a good matchup. Mm-hmm. I think that either way it goes, if it goes to decision, there's going to be some controversy. That's my opinion. Yeah,
it's boxing.
Especially lately, yeah. You know, they have been doing a lot of bad calls in terms of, like, decision-making, I think. But I think that Broner may come out with the victor and Pacquiao may get screwed.
Well, boxing has turned into, like, WWE because it's like, this is our big fight. Tyson versus Wilder. Tyson Fury versus Wilder. We made some money off this fight. How can we have another one to make more money?
Draw.
Let's make it a draw. Because, like, I'm a huge boxing fan, but to the casual fan, boxing's like fucking Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
Shit happens, like, once a year. You know what I mean? Who's the big fight? Mayweather versus this. But you know, boxing's like, okay, look, let's figure out ways that we can have more control of making these big fights.
Right.
So, of course, there's going to be controversy. Because, like, what's a bigger fight next? Pacquiao? Floyd, Broner, Floyd. You know what I mean? So it's like, if it's a close fight, boxing's like, okay, what's going to sell more? Because boxing is one of those event-to-event.
$1 billion industry.
Yeah, but they're based off like Kentucky Derby. They make so much money at once, and then the rest of the year, the money's not there because the casuals don't, the casuals or the general public don't watch it. They just tune in for that one big fight. So they're like, oh, how can we have power to control more of these big fights? Mm-hmm. So if you would have gave Tyson Fury the win, all the money goes back to England.
That's exactly what I was going to say, because now he's fighting
AJ.
Yeah.
AJ, and that fight would happen like that. The money stays in England. It's like, how do we keep the money and the revenue with the TV deals here and the pay-per-view concept here?
Yeah.
Let's, if the fight's closed,
that money's got to be in Vegas.
Let's make it a draw. Because if you take away that knockdown that happened in the 12th round in the Fury Wilder fight, one judge had it 116-110.
Right. That was so terrible.
It would have been 114-112. Mm-hmm. He would have had Fury or Deontay winning the fight anyway, even if he would have taken away that 2-point knockdown. That's fucking nuts.
But some people argue and say that, I would argue that Tyson came back and won that round, even though he got knocked down.
Yeah, he came back.
It should have all been 16-10, I thought. That's what I meant to say when it was horrible. Yeah. And then the 14-12, like, are you kidding me? Like, what?
It was terrible. But
when I heard that, I was like, are you? And I told Lisa too, I was like, they're probably going to call this crap a draw. And it's only because they've been doing it. And that turned me off. Like, I was like, man, I've been boxing out for so long. I'm just getting tired of it, though.
That's what happened in boxing. So, like I said, it goes back to it's one or two events a year that brings in all the revenue.
That's their fault, though. Dana White touched on this subject on some ESPN network. He said that boxing is all about a money grab, right? They don't really take care of their fighters, all of them, right? Their brand, they just go in there for a cash cow. They get that money and they're out, right? With UFC, the way he does it is they balance out their funds, but there's fights throughout the year that we all tune into.
Yeah, but UFC is different because it's one organization. You know, boxing is based off of different promotion companies.
Right.
So, like, if it was one umbrella, one organization, it'll be a lot different. It'd be more like the UFC style. You know, that's UFC's brand. You know what I mean? It's like, we're going to have one organization, kind of like the NFL, NBA. I didn't consider
that. That's true.
You know, boxing is just based off of individual promoters, and that's
but
how they
do
make
you
money.
Think that that's the right model, even though there's different promoters to just go in and cash grab? Like, do you think that they're more, the argument is like Showtime is showing off to HBO and saying, we made more money this year than you did? Or do you really think it's about, like, do you think they should take care of it and kind of spread that wealth out as opposed to just going there and grab money?
It's so PBC, they try to make it to like a UFC one umbrella type of organization, and it's tough to make it in boxing like that.
Well, they boxing, don't get the ratings. I don't watch a lot of fights. Keith Thurman's a big man over there, you know.
Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia. But like it's tough, you know, because boxing is Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia, Sean Porter. They have some Adrian Broners under it. They have some good fighters, you know what I mean? But the thing with the UFC, even though they're under one umbrella, it's a lot more organized. They spread out the wealth. You know, one or two boxing matches a year does what the UFC does in their 30 events they put on.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, but boxing is like the Kentucky Derby now. I mean, I don't think boxing can be...
But boxing's a worldwide thing, too. People tune in around the world.
Yeah, yeah. They
don't really do that for UFC.
Yeah, and
at least it doesn't have the same reach.
It doesn't have the same reach. And then, like how boxing is in Mexico or in England, you know, UFC has that, like, in Brazil. But mixed martial arts is so interesting because it's more than one technique. You know what I mean? You have, like, jiu-jitsu. You have Muay Thai, which brings, like, the Muay Thai fans in there. Of course, you have the stand up on the feet with the punching, which you bring some boxing fans. A lot of boxing fans are not, they're not big on UFC, but the wrestling, you know, I like the wrestling. Actually watching the UFC got me into wrestling, you know, where I'm like looking up like the wrestling, like national championships, seeing the rankings for each weight class, getting into the fighters. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. Yeah. It's pretty cool. You know,
expands your mind.
Expands your mind. I think the UFC is a good sport to collab, you know, even though like, I think, the boxing side is a little more differ because like there's like the old school fans or whatnot than the UFC fight. I think UFC fans are kind of starting to accept boxing. You know, they're looking about, you talk to some UFC guys and like, oh yeah, I watched the boxing fight. I'm getting more into boxing. It's like not that they're competing.
But everyone says the same thing. Like if you talk to just basic UFC fans, they say, oh, boxing's rigged.
But the thing is each sport's going to have their casuals. I mean, if you talk to diehards, you know, like Joe Rogan, he loves it. Of course, UFC commentator.
Even Dana White loves boxing.
Well, he started in boxing. People don't know that he was an amateur boxer.
Yeah,
he ran a boxing gym in Boston, and the reason why he left was because that gangster Whitey, the dude from Boston, Whitey something, big Irish gangster guy, didn't like Dana White teaching boxing to neighborhood kids, probably black kids or whatnot, and wanted to start taxing him.
Huh.
Dana White said no. Freaked out, left his apartment, grabbed his bulldog, flew down to Las Vegas where he originally went to high school, and then he met back up with the Batista brothers, and he just started to take a jiu-jitsu class for like to stay in shape, mm-hmm. and then what's this mixed martial arts stuff, and then they got into the business. Well,
he definitely did a good job. He's a really good promoter. He built it to what it is now.
Yeah, yeah. He is his personality sometimes like forget Dana White, but I like him. I like Dana.
It's
like
true to Dana. You know Dana. You know you're always going to get Dana.
Yeah.
Dana never defers from who he is. He's always going to be the guy that tells you how it is, and he'll be honest with you, right? He usually doesn't sugarcoat things, and usually doesn't hide things from you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I haven't talked to him. I don't know. Why ask him? You know, like he's that kind of guy. And it's like, why you ask guys? I already told you. I've answered this six times. Mm-hmm. Why are you asking me? Mm-hmm. But see, he still even answers it. Like, that's the thing that I like about him. You could see he's frustrated, but he still gives to the media, and he lets everyone know where he stands. I was talking with somebody about this, that they think that Dana White has all the control when it comes to like banning fighters and all this and suspend. Mm-hmm. No, he's the face of UFC, but he's not a part of the athletic commission.
No, he's not.
You know, and that's not his call. His thing is to promote his business. His thing is to put together the most entertaining fights, especially in nowadays, because he's kind of pressured too with how you said boxing is doing it. So. But well, he's getting
into boxing.
Yeah. He said he wants to, definitely.
No, I think 2019 is the year he's going to get in, and which should shake up.
Well, he said that he has some news that may be coming next year and for 2020.
It should shake up some boxing
that might be boxing.
Because, for one, he has a financial backing to do something.
Now he does,
He has the money.
Well, the Chinese owners in the
free world. His companies, they can put it under, I think they call it Zuffa Boxing, or they'll probably change it something else. But, they have the money to promote fights. UFC, the way they promote on their platform, their fighters, is awesome. Like, they had, like, the vlog series. They're kind of 24/7. And the way they promote fighters is great, you know. And if he can promote a boxer like that, or if he promoted, like, an Anthony Joshua fight, you know, like that. Like, because they promoted the shit out of McGregor.
Oh,
yeah. No, McGregor did his part with, you know, winning the fights. And talking all the shit and backing up with the shit talking. But the UFC did their part by putting millions of dollars into this guy. Mm-hmm. I remember like knowing about this guy by his second fight. Like, this Irish guy is so good at fighting. Who the fuck is this guy? And then like he fought. He won. And then he took like a year off because he got a knee injury.
Right.
Didn't hear about him. And kind of like the hype went away. And then he came back and he fought again. He won. And now he's talking. I'm like, whoa. This is the first time I see a UFC fighter talking like Floyd, you know, talking like Ali. He's confident and he's laughing. He has charisma.
Yeah.
And the more he won and the more money he got in the bank, the more cocky he got.
Yeah.
So like success was like perfect for him. You know what I mean? It's like, oh shit, he got more money. He got more cocky. He got more cooler. And then he was just like a cool dude. Like I remember after he beat, who was it? I think it might have been Jose Aldo. And they're talking about Jose Aldo, like, in a press case. He can turn it off and turn it on. They're talking about Jose Aldo, and he turns it off, and he's like, you know what? I cannot hate a man that has the same dreams that I have. I cannot hate a man who has the same passion that I have. We're in this sport for a reason. Something like that around those lines. I'm like, damn, that was, like, pretty, like, deep the way he said it. You know what I mean?
He's still somewhat humble, but you hit it. The more money he got, the more cocky he got. Because he even said in his documentary, I'm in it. People do it for money and fame. He said, I don't want to do it for fame. I just want to do it for money. Mm-hmm. He grew up poor. He was in the system. So he wanted the money, right? Now, when he was supposed to fight Aldo the first time before he fought Chad, when Aldo got hurt, mm-hmm. in the documentary, they recorded him saying, like, this guy's a legend. Like, I don't know if I should give him the respect he deserves, if I should do it in the second or the third round. Yeah. He said, no, forget about it. I'm going to do it. I have to knock him out. I'm going to do it in the first round. But even he was considering not going full out and getting this guy, giving this guy the respect that he deserves. I know he knocked him out 13 seconds, but the immediate interview you had with Joe Rogan, he said, look, he's a legend. He was a fighting champion. He's a great champion. He deserved to go out better than that. He deserved more mm-hmm. than that. Mm-hmm. So that's big for someone who obviously knows how to sell fights, because it was a big sell. He was doing it, because even behind the scenes, when you watch the documentary, he really didn't hate Aldo, mm-hmm. but he knew he was good. He knew he was going to be the champion.
And that's what he did.
And he showed the respect.
And, like, there's other things that he had said when, like, early on in his career, like, he said he used to run when he was hungry. I didn't run on a full stomach. I used to run when I was hungry. Well, why is that? It's something when you're hungry for something. When you're hungry for something, you do it. And he's like, when I'm hungry, I'll go run because I'm working for something. And he's like, my stomach was just like, I wanted something, and I was running and running and running. And I was hungry for something. I was feeling alive. But, you know, he puts it in his Irish voice and the way he says it and his melody and shit. So it's like, damn, that shit sounds legendary.
Those are those core values, though, that he still carries with him, even though he's got all this money now.
I think the fame, of course, it hits people fast. And you fucked up. We saw it happen with John Jones. He messed up. But I'm not sure if McGregor can get back to the level of fighting that he was at one point.
He doesn't want to, though. That's the thing. So Kavanaugh, his trainer, said he's got to give me a reason to fight. He can't say, oh, because they want me to fight this guy. He's got to give me a true reason for me to train him, or else I'm not training him. So he said, I can see in McGregor's eyes, he's done. He doesn't want to fight anymore. And I think it's because he said, oh, I'm only this, because he's always said, I'm only 27, I'm only 28, I'm still young, I'm only 29. But you get to a point where now he's made all this money. He reached pretty much his end goal. He was a two-division champ. He boxed. He made millions. I think that he's at the point now where he's taking care of his family. He's set where he wants to be. That fighting isn't his main focus anymore. And, you know, for a fan, you're like, oh, but he's only 30. He still has years. Want to fight? Listen, he's giving us some entertaining fights, some interesting, you know, YouTube mm-hmm. clips to go back to look at. If he's done, that's fine. He did what he set out to do, become champion, show that he was good, and support his family. That's what he's done. I have no problem with him quitting, but let people who are hungry for that chance, let them, you know, like Brian T-City, right? Mm-hmm. If McGregor was still there, he wouldn't have had that shot against Holloway. Mm-hmm. You know, it would have been McGregor, right? But because McGregor's desire isn't really there right now, mm-hmm. he's allowing these youngins to go in and get their chance, which is great because that shows respect to the sport.
But he shows a blueprint too on how to make money. Not everyone has to be like him and talk like him, because now if you come after him, you're acting like Conor McGregor.
Exactly.
You're not acting yourself.
Yeah.
And to do what he did and like predict like rounds and all that stuff, and you gotta think about his list. You know what I mean? He has Max Holloway, he has what's the other guy's name that he knocked out?
Diaz, and he's got Alvarez,
Poirier. Yeah. He even though I thought he lost
Aldo
both Diaz fights, you know.
I thought he lost.
But at 145, he's a king over there. 155, he beat Alvarez. I was never too big on him. He beat him, lost to Diaz, came back, beat Diaz.
But he lost to Diaz at 170.
I just don't know what Iggy fights could be again. Be great if he won, but I don't see him winning. I just don't know what's next for him. And he's doing so well with his businesses, his adventures outside of UFC, that like if he focused on that, or even if he went to wrestling for one like WrestleMania, he'd get $50 million. Yeah.
But that's smart of him because he is investing his money for the long run. So again, I have nothing against
him. He's well taken care of. Yeah. I like him to, he signed that huge fight deal with UFC. I think it was 6 fights. I like him to, I like to see him fight, you know, a couple more times.
Well, he's probably, well, fight for me makes sense for him. What to be, to fight Holloway. If Brian T. City is the second guy in the featherweight division, Edgar's not that guy anymore. Like those guys aren't that guy no more. So Connor, I think, and Holloway would be the match to make. I know he's fought at 170, he's fought at 155, but Connor's true beast is at 145.
It's going to be, he can't make 145 anymore. He can't make it down that low.
Man, if he could, that would be the fight to make. Because at 155, who's going to fight? He lost to Khabib.
You can fight dominated. Max Holloway at 155.
He won't go up. Max Holloway will not go up to fight him.
Well, Dana White was talking about him going up. Like, he made weight this one.
Right. But I know, because he shouldn't be fighting at 145 either. Max Holloway struggles to make that. He has concussions.
Yeah, but he cuts weight. The thing is, it's like, now you're at the Mighty Mouse effect. It's like, who gives a shit? You know what I mean? It's like, okay, you're beating everyone's ass, and like,
that's why
if you're not fighting for fame and money, what are you fighting for? You know what I mean? What do you fight because you love to fight? But the thing is, you get to a point in your career where you win 13 in a row. It's like, okay, maybe I can get bigger checks. Right. Maybe I can get some sponsorships. How are your viewerships? Are they going up? Sponsorships going up? Or casual fans tuning in to watch you fight? You know what I mean? Does the general public care about you? Can you sell out this arena? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want to go up to another level. He's won 13 in a row. You know what I mean? He can go back and rewipe out that division again. And you can turn into another Anderson Silva, or you can go up.
But we're past that time. We can't have like another Anderson because that division was weak. The UFC won't stand for that. The fans won't stand for that.
But he's already beaten. I think he's beaten like 1 through 8 in his division.
No, I agree.
But his only choice, and he's not a small guy. The dude walks around like at 185 or something like that. So he loses and then cuts a lot of weight.
I know.
You know, and he's tall for that division. Connor,
6'2", I think, isn't he 6'1"?
He's probably maybe 6 foot. He's probably around Connor's height. Connor moved up. They start the same weight class. They're not too far apart in age. You move up to 155. That's the money division. That division is stacked.
My argument with that though is that you mentioned it with the whole Mighty Mouse thing, right? The 145, you can't just cancel out 145 division, but it's so weak that you need to make a splash. That's why you drop him. 155 is set. They're good.
It's not. But the thing, he's already beaten everybody.
That's why, not Connor. That's why I'm saying, that's why you push Connor to drop.
There's no way Connor can make 145. He was dying the last couple times that he was. Put up a side by side money. He doesn't need the money.
I know, but if you put enough money out there, I guarantee he'll drop to 145 for the fight.
No, I don't think he will. I don't think he will.
Throw the money in, and then throw the fact that they're already saying Max Holloway is the best featherweight champion.
But then there's a disadvantage now because
they both walk around the same weight.
No, I think Connor might be a little bit bigger, but Connor hasn't fought in that weight class. That's the thing.
Right.
Connor hasn't fought in that weight class. And what Connor fans would do is if he goes down and he gets stopped in the first round, he's like, well, he's drained.
Right.
You know, an even playing field, because people forget Max Holloway tried to fight Khabib.
Yeah.
The 2018.
Yeah.
The dude was so big walking around, couldn't even make weight for that fight. So it shows you the preparation it takes for him to get down to 145.
But again, you incent them with the best 145 fighter of all time. This is the fight that's going to determine who, because in Connor's eyes, he was the one that went through that division first, right? And he never got dethroned from that division. And Max Holloway's eyes, there's no one even close to him. That's why I'm saying that makes sense.
He can't make that weight. There's no way, because he was even talking about, you know what I mean, the reason why they moved up wasn't because, you know, he won 2 belts, but that weight cut was terrible for him.
Yeah.
It was terrible, like not eating for like 4 days or whatnot and sweating all the energy you have out of you.
Yeah.
I say they fight at a healthier weight and they'll figure out the king at 155. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think it's more healthier for them because now there's no excuses.
In terms of health, yes, absolutely. It's healthy. It's better for them to fight at a higher weight class. Again, if you're going based off the business standpoint of trying to make the money fight,
but that
really determine.
But that's not really the money fight. Like if someone said Connor Max at 145, I'm like, okay. If they say Connor Khabib again, I'm like, okay. If they really? Say,
I'd rather see the Max fight because that's going to be more entertaining.
But not at 145.
I think so.
I don't know. For me,
because who fights 145? Then who's Max Holloway going to fight next? Tell me who he fights well, at he, that division.
Well, he should be moving up.
But
he
take that away. Who does he fight at 145?
He actually never fought Frankie.
Okay, so he you would make the Frankie fight? Well, he's 39 years old. He's slowed down. He's
still he's number one contender now.
I don't think. Oh well, I think he was number four. I think
he was up there.
And yeah, but then Brian beat him and then dropped him.
You know what's the guy? What's the 135 champ?
Let's see, DJ Dillashaw.
He can go up. Too small for him, but he can go up. Too short, actually. You know, it's just not. I don't think Conor versus Max at 145. That is not to me. I just
from a business aspect, I think you make it. I see what you're.
I see at 155. It's unhealthy. They already. The media is already talking about Max moving up because his weight cut's so crazy. You know, Conor's weight cut going back to 145 will be pretty nuts too. And I'm pretty sure I heard either him or his coach talk about them not going back down to 145 again.
Right.
155, they both fight at a weight that they both can make guaranteed.
So this is the way they have it. They have Max Holloway champion, Brian Ortega, Jose Aldo, Frankie Edgar. Oh, okay. So Mociano, that guy's coming. Renato Mociano, He's actually up and coming, but I think he's fighting Aldo next. So that's going to be good. Or no, Chad Mendes. He's fighting Chad Mendes.
Auto shot. Chad Mendes is back. I don't think that Holloway's beat Chad Mendes either.
Right. And then Chad Mendes is a wrestler. So that'd be interesting because, you know, Holloway can, he's a two-way fight. He can go down or he can stay up. But that's who it is. For me, I don't want to see him fight. I mean, he beat Jose Aldo. I don't want to see him fight him again. I don't want to see him fight Edgar. Mociano, maybe him.
So it's time for him to move up then. It's not.
Yeah,
because
then.
Because normally.
Because in this division, you have Khabib, Tony Ferguson, Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, Kevin Lee, and Edson Barbosa.
Well,
Edson Barbosa and him would be a good fight.
Yeah. Check this. 155 stacked. Check this out. It's like, it's Daniel Cormier. You know, when John Jones had take his 2 years off. Daniel's already beat everybody in the division. It's like, well, who do you fight next?
Yeah.
Go up to heavyweight.
Yeah. But we know that John Jones is better than him. And they actually ended up fighting.
But Daniel Cormier, this is when John Jones took 2 years off. Yeah, Daniel Cormier won the heavyweight belt when John Jones wasn't fighting in the division anymore. Yeah. Couldn't find him anymore because he wasn't fighting.
Right.
So it's like, you beat everybody. Who do you fight next? And they put some young Volkan guy against him. And he was supposed to knock him out. And it was a one-sided fight. It's like, who do you fight next? And he's like, let me go up and win the title up there. And he went up there and won the title up there and solidified his status as, you know, one of the best. John Jones was in an interview and said that Daniel Cormier is the second best fighter in the UFC.
Yeah, but I think that they do that because they know that the light heavyweight division is going to be okay without Cormier there.
Yeah, the 145 division would be okay without Max there. Max is not a pay-per-view star that's keeping that division alive. You know what I mean?
Right.
Max is
he's the only guy they have, though.
He's the only, I guess there's only one champion there's down there. And they have Otto, who knows what he can do without Max there? Who knows what, after Conor left, all these dudes came back and flourished. You know what I mean? So who knows what happens when Max leaves? I think if Max Max says, you know what? I don't want to be champion. I want to be the pound for pound best fighter in the world. You know, you get that?
Go up to fight Khabib.
Go up. Not just compete.
I'm saying, well, he's the king of that division. That's why you have to fight him.
Yeah, let's see what you can do against the 155 guys.
I think the Barbosa fight would be a good entry fight for him at 155.
Barbosa, dude, that whole freaking, you just saw Kevin Lee destroy Barbosa.
But then Kevin Lee got beat by
but it shows you how competitive that division is. Because people,
I thought that Kevin Lee was going to lose that fight after seeing Aquinta the way he fought Khabib. I had him as a favorite.
Well, people decide, like, was that just an anomaly? Like, did that fight just did it happen like that? Because, you know,
was
like
a turning point in his career.
Point,
you know,
and it's a turning point in his career, and he shows how good he is.
Yeah,
and 155 is stacked.
He's like 8 or 9. They disrespected with like an 8 or 9 ranking. It's like he's better than that.
And you have Tony Ferguson.
He's there.
Who hasn't lost.
He's number
in years. He's number one contender. You got Conor McGregor. You know his what he did at 145. You know, so that's the division that if you want to become the number one pound for pound and you want to become a pay-per-view star, if he goes up there and starts whacking dudes off left and right, then you can say, yo, he's the best of all time.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the most stacked division right now, the UFC. Light heavyweight, not as stacked as it used to be.
I think middleweight's pretty stacked right now. And which, for the first time in years, is the strongest it's ever been.
It's been the strongest.
You have Whitaker, you have Gastelum, you have...
Israel,
yeah. But
I'm not that big on Kevin Gastelum. Yoro Romero is like one of those guys, like, you're just there, but you keep losing. Not that big on him.
Jacare Souza, he's not doing too bad.
I don't know. That division... It's, I think the 155 is stacked.
Yeah.
The 170 is pretty good too.
You know, I'm not really solid 170.
Well, they added Askren.
Yeah, but he's going to, but he's not going to fight. He's dropping down to the he's going to be the first 165 pound champion.
Yeah, because he,
him and Tyron trade together.
Well, no, they went to college together too.
Yeah, and they train together. They still continuously train together. Yeah,
that guy's kind of funny. I actually kind of like that guy.
Ben Askren, I like him too. Yeah, he's very humble. He just laid back. He's like, oh yeah, I haven't really talked to Dana White. Oh, I heard Dana White doesn't like you. He doesn't? You know, he kind of has that attitude. I don't know. I haven't talked to him, so I don't know if he does or not.
Yeah,
you know,
so he has that laid back attitude. And, you know, he's like a cool cat.
Yeah,
and he talks some good trash. He talks trash about that Covington dude.
Oh yeah, he's racist, bro. We all know that. And he's trash.
Actually, it's interesting. I don't think he's racist. I think that this whole act that he's putting on to make money, entertainment.
Well, his persona he's putting out is racist.
Yeah, well, of course. He found a niche, the MAGA, you know, Trump. And so he can get some fans. He's not even that popular,
Kanye actually. Kanye West found a niche.
But he actually, he was roommates with John Jones at the community college. They went to community college together. And they actually won a national championship together. They're roommates. They know each other from the past. And a lot of, like, black dudes that knew this guy was like, it's funny, this guy wasn't like this a year or two ago. But, you know, it's an act.
We had a friend like that.
I know.
Things change, you know?
The shit happens. But but it's an act. And you know what? You have to give him props for beating Rafael Dos Anjos, like he said.
Yeah, I can't believe that he fell off as big as he did. That was disappointing because he was dominating everyone. And then that first knockout changed his life.
Typical Rafael.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, dude, after someone did a record when they started testing, like, fighters.
Yeah,
they started testing all the fighters in the UFC, and the Brazilians, man, like, fuck, dude, they went from dominating, like, for the 5 years prior to the testing, they were like fucking 100 wins, like fucking 15 losses, like some crazy shit. All these top Brazilian champions, and Brazilian had like the middleweight, the light heavyweight, all this, like, they had all the fucking champs, dude. Yeah. Machida or what's his name? God, Shogun. They had Anderson, they had Rafi, they had a bunch of dudes. Auto women champ. Well, they still have the women champs.
Yeah.
But they start testing.
Well, two women are actually fighting. Brazilians never fight each other. And Cyborg and Nunez are on that card that we talked about, the John Jones.
Yeah, so they're going to lose one. So, like, they start testing, right? And that record that went from, like, this amazing record, all these champions, the next 5 years after testing, is the Brazilian record just went.
They all just fell off.
It went from, like, you know, 100 to 30 wins or something like that to, like, you know, 15 to 100 losses. You know, it was the craziest, like, turnaround. And all those champs, you know what I mean, just fell off, man.
All right, so before we end this, I want to just go through this. So we started with the UFC 232, and I want to finish with it. John Jones, Alexander Gustafsson, who wins that, and how do they win?
It's a tough one. I'm going for John Jones. You know, I actually saw him the other day. You know, he looked in shape. Like, he looks like he's walking about 210, and this is about 10 days out of the fight. I could be totally wrong, but he looked like fit. I'm gonna go with John Jones. Fourth round TKO.
Okay, all right. Chris Cyborg, Amanda Nunes.
Another tough one. I was thinking about that on the way here. I'm gonna go Cyborg. Third round decision.
I think. Okay. Yeah. You know what? That's actually pretty good. Carlos Condit against Michael Chiesa.
Condit, third round decision.
I hope so.
Hold on. I have to go back. So it's a title fight.
Yeah, so it'll be five round, yeah.
So I'm going to have to go with Cyborg TKO in fourth round.
TKO fourth round, okay, because Amanda Nunes is moving up. That's crazy. Yeah. So Latifi against Corey Anderson.
I'll go with Corey Anderson decision on this one.
And then what about Chad Mendes and Volkanovski, Alexander Volkanovski?
Mendes guillotine, rear naked.
Rear naked. I think Alexander knocks out Chad. I agree that I think Latifi. Yeah, I agree. Anderson. No, Latifi knocks out Corey Anderson. Carlos Condit, I think decision. I think Cyborg wins. I don't know how yet. And I think John Jones gets a knockout like the second, third round.
Oh, wow.
So, well, you know what? Corey, man, I'm glad that we finally got a chance to do this. Again, everyone, this is finally live on iTunes and Google Music. So thank you guys for all the support. Everyone from SoundCloud. I'm not leaving SoundCloud, so we're still going to be posting on there. You know, I've developed a fan base on there. But, you know, I hope we can do this again more.
Oh, yeah,
we can
definitely
talk fighting. Definitely enjoy talking fighting. NBA, college basketball. Those are little things that I haven't really talked about. So those are subjects that you and I can go into.
Yeah, we can go into that. And, you know, we can talk about some interesting things too. You know, history. You know, you can change this up a little bit. Talk about some history stuff. Or, you know, that's what makes these podcasts cool. Because you can be so universal.
Yeah.
And you can touch base on different things. It's a normal conversation. Yeah. And, you know, can't
it's
wait
just
to do
our
again.
Personalities jumping into it. And we always, I mean, off the mic, we talk so much about conspiracies, about documentaries, and so all these things. And these are things that I've personally wanted. I mean, I've told you, like, come on, so we can talk about it. And then now we got Evan last time we talked with him. So he wants to partake in it. And, you know, he's a good substitute for Ray since we can't get Ray.
Yeah.
So I like Evan. And so I think that we definitely got to bring him on
because
and definitely talk about that.
We're everyday people and none of this is scripted. You don't have sponsors, so we're not following a script.
Nope.
But if you want to be a sponsor, please contact Alex.
Yeah, the email's listed on there.
Start opening up spots to sponsors, you know. But yeah, nothing's scripted. We're just kind of just going off the top of the brain and we don't even have a stat sheet for anything.
Nope.
So,
it's all memory retention. And then I do also want to touch on certain, like we'll have a podcast specifically to talk about what you do. And, I got people that, you know, I got like a friend who's a cop. I got another buddy who's DJ, a trainer and stuff and a DJ. So to talk about their aspects, their life, how they got to their way. And then if people want to actually do those things, you know, tips that they can do to help them. Cause there's a lot of people that don't enjoy helping, but we have fortunate friends that do. So those are all things that'll be coming again. Thank you for tuning into the Culture Punch podcast, Corey. Always a pleasure, man, and we'll talk to you guys again.
Thank you.
On behalf of the Culture Punch podcast team, I'd like to thank you for tuning into this episode. Go check us out on social media, Facebook at Culture Punch Podcast, Twitter at Culture_Punch, Instagram at Culture Punch Podcast. Give us your feedback, your thoughts, what you want to listen to. Give us a follow, a like. We really do appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for